Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, damas y caballeros, welcome back to another edition of Leaving the Ring Radio. I'm your host, Dave Duenas, with my co-host, Gabriel Montoya, and the man behind the switchboard, Mr. David Chin. Sorry about that. It was a little bit of a pause in the beginning of the show. I was over here typing away, talking to Mr. Gabriel Montoya, you know, across over. He's in SoCal. I'm in NorCal. Interesting few days, man. It's been raining. It's been gloomy. I don't know how it's been over there in Southern California, but over here in Northern California, it's pretty bad. I took a drive out to Sacramento yesterday to go check out Guy Raub. Most of you guys will remember his back and forth war with Joel Diaz Jr. from Boxing 360. It was an early candidate for Fight of the Year. Those two prospects, man, definitely left it in the ring, and I had a chance to go out there and watch him spar. I mean, some intense sparring. This kid is, he's only got one gear. He reminded me a whole lot of Brandon Rios and Antonio Margarito when I went out there to go check them out when they sparred. I mean, they look to take their spar partners' heads off. Gabe, I was talking to you a little bit about it. He's being trained by the late Diego Corrales' father, Ray Woods, who also used to be the trainer of Brandon Flawless Gonzalez, and now he's got a hold of Guy Raub, and it was, you know, a lot of interesting things that we had a chance to talk about. I did put it on a video, so I'll be posting that up maybe later on next week. But we're going to have a chance to have Diego Corrales' father come on the show, Ray Woods, probably next week or the following week when we do our roundtable for the upcoming fight between Floyd Mayweather and Miguel Cotto. But we got a good show today. We're hoping it's going to be a good show for everybody here on Leaving the Ring. Hold on. And Gabe, are you there?
I am here.
All right. I was just making sure because I couldn't hear you and all that, man.
I was on mute because I've been scarfing down my dinner right before the show. I've been lost in a writing hole. I've got two stories coming out tonight, one on the Golden Gloves heavyweight champ out of Iowa, who just won the Iowa Golden Gloves, I should say, Javante Charles. It's a piece I've been kind of making sure that I get right because he's got an interesting story. We should get him on Leaving the Ring here pretty soon. And I wanted to get it right, and, you know, I'm kind of a perfectionist with my writing. My other story is going to be the lead for Max Boxing tonight on Michael Katsidis and Justin Fortune, who's training Michael Katsidis. He was on the show last week. They fight tomorrow night on Friday Night Fights. So I'm very excited about it, and another one that I've spent a lot of time with him in the gym, so I'm trying to remember everything and look at all my notes and get it right. So I've been basically in a writing hole all day trying to get this done, and it probably won't end till late tonight. But I'm excited about the show, man. I think we have a great lineup of guests, and I just can't wait to get at them.
Yeah, same thing here. You know, we got Amadeo Reyes coming on with us, a junior whose father just passed away. He's going to be facing his rematch with Alan Sanchez, who's from Fairfield, 6-1. They fought at Doubletree. A lot of fight fans felt that Alan Sanchez from Fairfield, California, should have walked away with the win, but he didn't. But this is the chance of finding out whether or not he could pull it off. This time, though, on national television, ESPN2. We're talking about ESPN. A lot of fight fans, including myself, Gabriel, excited, just like you, about Michael Katsidis on ESPN. But not just that. I think the card alone, it's been some time that ESPN has put up a good card, and having Michael Katsidis and Reyes and Sanchez on there, I think makes up for a great, excellent Friday night fight for a lot of us, man, that we've been waiting for ESPN.
I mean, I can't wait for this weekend. I think it's, you know, Friday Night Fights has been in a bit of a slump all year. And I think we both agree that the way to break that slump is a Michael Katsidis fight. The guy that he's fighting is no joke. You know, it's going to be a real fight. You know, the fights this weekend with the top-ranked pay-per-view, let's be honest. You know, we're going to talk a lot about them at length, but, you know, they're they're showcase fights. You know, it's in, like Steve Kim's article on Monday on Max Boxing was unnecessary evil. Sometimes promoters have to do these pay-per-view shows to kind of keep their guys active, to kind of live up to the contract. You know, certain guys have a certain amount of fights they need to fight each year in order to fulfill that contract. And so that's what this is. But Albert Mensa versus Michael Katsidas on Friday night fights, I know Mensa's only got like 10 knockouts. He's got, you know, 3 losses, I believe, and like a draw. But he's a rough and tumble fighter, man. He's from Ghana. You know those guys are always tough. Michael's stepping up to 140 pounds for the second time in his career. This should be a very interesting fight. I think he's very sharp. He puts on a lot of pressure. He's trying out some new things with his trainer, Justin Fortune. That probably, to me, is a fight that I'm looking forward to most of all. Besides maybe the Mauricio Herrera and Mike Alvarado fight, I think that one's going to be fun, too.
I think so, too. I you know what? Mauricio is going to be talking to Josh Bigtree McDaniel from Leaving the Ring a little earlier today, and hopefully we can get him on kind of on the tail end of the of our radio show. We have Adnan Morris is scheduled to be here with us as well, and then we got Ronnie Rios, who's from the Espinosa Boxing Camp, along with Adnan Morris. He's going to be calling in, and we're going to talk to him about his past weekend fight. And Adnan Morris has got his upcoming fight here on April. So we've got a lot of stuff here on the Leaving the Ring. Let's not even forget, we got the female world champion, Amanda Serrano, that's going to be calling in a short bit, in a few minutes, actually, to talk to us about her upcoming world title fight. It's going to be fun. A lot of stuff here, man. We got a lot of things. We're going to be rolling pretty quick here on Leave It in the Ring.
Mm-hmm.
You're not the only one, Gabriel, but I need a drink. I need a drink too, man. Yeah, it's been
not
crazy.
Make mine a double. It's been one of those days. I literally looked up at the clock like 10 minutes ago and was like, wow, it's 4:50. Like I've been in like transcription hell. You know, most people don't. They look up for a job and like, you guys got it easy. You get to see the fights and all that. But in between all that, we actually write these articles. And when you do interviews with people, like in this one, I like to get a lot of sources. So I talked to Justin Fortune for a total of, you know, I watch the whole camp, but when I sit down for the interview, I try to keep it to 10 minutes. Because 10 minutes is about 1,000 words. And we talked to Michael Katsidas for a long time on the radio show last week. And
right.
That was like 1,600 words. And those things translate. I'm a pretty fast typist, but those things translate into hours of just sitting there and typing and typing and typing and listening and typing. And so it's going to take me a little bit to get into my rhythm here. I looked up at the clock and was like, wow, like it's about time to do the show.
Yeah, same thing over here, you know. The streets have been pretty packed. Unfortunately, there was a police officer that was gunned down over here in Modesto, California. So all the roads have been blocked. A lot of sirens. So if you hear any sirens in the background, no, they're not coming for Dave Duane is here. They're trying to find the guy, the perpetrator, and hopefully they do. You know, but other than that, like I said, I went down to Sacramento yesterday, had a chance to speak to Ray Woods at the Bloodhound Boxing Gym. And saw Ben Bautista from San Francisco, a very well-known and respected trainer out of San Francisco, who was even offered to be part of the Olympic team for this year. And he said he had to turn it down because, for one, it was going to be in Brazil, and he's got fighters that he tends to, and it's just there was no way he was going to be able to fit in his schedule. It was going to conflict, so he decided to take a step down and say no. I mean, that's what he told me, but. Maybe he might change his mind. I don't know. We definitely got to get Ben on with us one of these days. He's, like I said, he's a very, very respected trainer. I get everybody that hits me up all at once, so I apologize if I kind of seem like I'm brain scattered here on Leaving Ring. Like, but we got people asking us, you know, confirming, making sure that the fighter's going to come on or et cetera. And then we got some last minute, people that want to try to get on Leaving the Ring, and we try to squeeze in everybody. But at the same time, we have to make sure that we let the listeners, the fight fans, the people that really, truly matter, that make this sport moving, that keeps the oils, you know, just wheeling through and keeps that train just going forward. It's the fight fans. You know, give them a chance to come on and speak to us and talk some boxing here on Leave It in the Ring.
You know, it's a trip. I mean, after talking to you, you got back from the gym, and it's such a difference in energy. Like, you know, you get off the phone with somebody, and it's like, well, you know, this person, you and I will always have these sessions, we'll talk well, I talked to this person and this is going on, or did you hear about this? But there's a different energy when you go to a boxing gym. You know, you ran into Tony Lopez there.
Yeah.
You got to hang out with Ray Woods. There's such a different thing. It's always, you know, we always talk about this, writers versus bloggers, or guys that want to be in this sport, but they don't take that next step to actually travel to a major city, make that move and that physical commitment to living in a city where you can actually get to fighters. And Sacramento was a fight town for a long time. It's got a nice tradition. So it's nice that you got to go up there. But such a difference, right? You come out of there with a million stories that your head's overloaded with all the information that you've just taken in from watching the sparring, talking with the trainers, hearing, I imagine Lopez has a million great stories.
Oh, man, you know what? I mean, if we could just get him on, I mean, I just had a piece of the taste of the stories and the experience that he was, you know, he was able to share, you know, with me. And, but I mean, you could still see that those memories, man, are almost like a film in his head. You know, and the way he breaks it down, and as sharp the guy is, he's a bail bonds guy, he owns bail bonds, that's what he does, but you can still see that his career and being a fighter, that was the highlight of his life.
Yeah.
There was nothing more. Nothing's going to adopt it, you know what I mean? You know, like he said, what I love, you know, there's one thing I got to mention that he said. He goes, the difference between kids that go in the gym now and kids that when I was fighting was their fathers were taking them and forcing them. He goes, I got up at 4 a.m. every day, ran, I did my run, I came back, ate something, took a shower, and then at 6:30, he worked at a brick company, and he said he would do that from 6:30 to 2:30. From 2:30, he would jump off, and he would go to a friend that would jump on the back of the truck, and he would go to Novato, California, where Bobby Chacon, the schoolboy, was at. And Bobby was at the pinnacle of his career. He was in the prime of his career, and he was thrown in there. And he said, man, he would get beaten the hell out of him. They would beat the shit out of him. His eyes were black and blue. He would have a fat lip. He'd have all these bruises and everything on his head. And then he said that in these days, a guy's face like that wouldn't look normal. In those days, they didn't know any better. So they just thought that was normal to come home and look all beat up. But parents would freak out in these days if they saw their son or their daughter come up with a bunch of marks in his face. And he said that's what made him a fighter. He said he would get his ass kicked. And after, you know, Bobby Chacon would shake his head at him, you know, out of disappointment, he thought. That's how he took it. He said, I felt disrespected. And he goes, and I would keep mentioning to myself, I'm going to kick this guy's ass. I'm going to kick his ass. And he said the first year, Bobby obviously just beat the crap out of him. The second year, he said, you know what? They would even up on certain matches. He would have some. Tony would have some. And he said that third year, he started beating the crap out of Bobby Chacon. He started putting him down. But then he said, then I realized one thing. When I was getting better, he was getting older. It's just some great, great all-around stories from Tony the Tiger Lopez out of Sacramento, California, man. We got to get him on. He's a very talkative guy, and he's got tons and tons and tons of stories.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, it's such a – on a lot of levels, it's a very oral sport. You know, it's full of oral history, from the skills that the trainers pass on to the fighters to the stories you just hear in the gym. It's like – I always liken it to the barbershop where you're just kicking it and there's no political correctness. You know, it's like there's casual racism. There's like no holds barred in the things that they say and the stories they tell you. And there's always like, you're off the record, right? Like, yeah, I'm just taking in the knowledge. And they'll just tell you things, you know, things that went on behind the scenes or, you know, stories about guys' personal lives, you know, and what they did before a fight, how they train or the crazy things they did to do to train. And that's what's interesting. Like for me tonight, writing this story about Fortune and Katsidis, there's a huge difference between doing a conference call or talking to a guy, you know, over the phone, even if it's a one-on-one, and spending a good amount of time watching somebody train in the gym, getting to know the trainer, developing that trust. Like the first day I went to go watch Katsidis spar, I tried to do an interview that day, and we'd actually never met. And, you know, I come and go kind of as I please at that gym because I train there. And I came in and talking to Justin and hanging out in the office, and then I come out and Catches is getting wrapped. And I'm like, can we do this interview? And Justin's like, talk to this guy. He's a reporter, and we trust him. But, you know, that doesn't really do it for the fighter. They're kind of looking
right.
Like, they say, well, who are you? And we did this interview, and he was very distracted, and everybody was excited to see him. There was other Australians there talking to him. And it wasn't the best interview on the planet. And you fast forward to how he was on the radio after you spend a lot of time, you gain that trust from being there. Michael's also watched me train. He's encouraging me to get an amateur fight in. There's a difference there, you know, when you really start to get to know these guys and you get on that ground level. And I'm not saying that this to, like, brag or anything like that. What I'm saying is to any of those young writers, and I know there's a lot of internet writers that listen that haven't taken that next step, there's no substitute for it, for showing up and being there and being a part of the scene. This is a thing that you have to get in the culture and understand the culture in order to fully report what it is you see. You know, like you mentioned the whole thing about there's no substitute. You know, Tony has a successful bail bond business.
Right.
But, like, I remember the last time I wasn't there yesterday for the Big Bear Open workouts for Mosley and Canelo, but the time before that I went for Canelo's open workout, and De La Hoya was there. And watching him watch Canelo train, and all cameras pointed, not on Oscar, but all of them pointed on Canelo, and he's working out. And you could tell when I asked Oscar, what is it that you miss? Is there anything that
I remember
can replace
that.
This? Yeah, and he was like, there's nothing that can replace this. Like, he's like, I loved the training, you know, the being in the ring, all of that. You know, the guy's probably got more money than God, but there's nothing that can replace being in that ring, you know, no matter what it is you look for. And that's something that is, you know, I try to touch it. I know you were an amateur fighter. It's something that you try to get a hold of, but you just can't. You know, it's a club that not a lot of people can ever truly get in. But you can try, you know, and like I said, try to be there on that ground level, actually be in the gym, get to know these people. And that's where the richness, and I think what's missing from boxing writing, like Michael Katz said, editing was what's missing, but my opinion, what's missing is guys on the ground level getting to know the culture. I think too much there's a remove, and guys are sitting on the back on the phone thinking they can do it from a distance. Even, you know, and Dan Raphael's a guy that I actually get along with really well, but I get the sense that he doesn't go to the gym. He's a good reporter, but as a boxing writer, the way, you know, Liebling was, Damon Runyon was, there's a difference. Those guys were on the ground level.
Yeah,
I think that's really important.
Yeah, I, Scott, you know what? I agree. I definitely agree. I want to, and we'll get back into that subject, and we'll definitely patch in Fight Fans. Fight Fans, you want to call on Leaving the Ring and speak to myself, Dave Duenas, and Gabriel Montoya here on the radio show, you definitely can. Number is 347-215-7598. But we got to patch in our first guest. Amanda Serrano is here with us on Leaving the Ring. Are you there, Amanda?
Yes, I am.
How you doing? Glad that you're back with us here on Leaving the Ring Radio.
How you doing? Fine. Hello?
Yeah. No, we can hear
you. Oh, okay. Hi. I'm sorry.
Welcome, Amanda. Well, how are you? This is Gabriel Montoya and Gabe Duenas, my partner. How are you today?
Oh, fine. And you?
I'm doing great. I know we did an interview already this week, so we're just going to repeat it so people can listen to it this time.
No problem.
Let's talk about this fight. First off, there was something I didn't know heading into this, and I was wondering why this wasn't a unification fight. You're not moving up in weight. This is still a super featherweight fight. And historically speaking, you're the very first IBF female IBF super featherweight title holder. But this is only for the WBC female super featherweight title. Can you explain why that is?
Well, we was in the talks of defending the title, but we took the fight with Ellen Nunez. I believe it was 8 days shy of a month. You're not able to take a fight within 30 days of defending the title. So that's what happened. We had to take the fight with Ella, and it was a couple of days shy of being a month. So they stripped me of the title.
You basically got a lesson in not just, you know, in the ring you're still learning, but now you're learning about what goes on outside the ring, I imagine.
Yeah, but I say, you know, I had this opportunity for the WBC, so, you know, You lose one and you get another one.
Was it upsetting to you, though? I mean, you worked so hard to get that title and to be the very first one. Did you expect them to treat you just a little bit better than just kind of, here's the deadline, let's take it away? I mean, it's not like there's a huge line behind you of girls just clamoring to get that belt.
Yeah, of course it was disappointing. I was sad for a couple of days. But, you know, it comes with the territory. You know, I train hard. I'm always training hard. I'm up for any fight. So, you know, when this fight came along, I said, you know, back in the gym working harder. So I said, let's go get it. So, you know, that's another notch in our belt. So I'm looking forward to getting a lot more than just, you know, one title.
You know,
you
the
surprised?
Fight that just really quick, yeah, that fight that most fans right now kind of remember you from is from the Ella Nunes fight. I mean, that was such a back and forth, you know, war. Did you know that she was going to come hard like that? And is that why you stood your ground with her in that fight?
I mean, of course. That was my fourth time fighting Ella Nunes. I know she's a warrior. She's a warrior to the heart. I love her to death, in and out the ring. She's a great fighter. And I wanted it to be a fan fight, you know. I know the way Ella fights, and I just took it to her, and we just went to war, and we had the fans on their feet, excited. And those are the type of fights that, you know, I like, you know. And just to prove to the fans, I was able to go hard 8 rounds, and I still had 2 more rounds in me if I had to.
And you know what, too, because it was a great way of Boxing 360 kind of introducing you, because I also saw, too, because, you know, first off, a lot of male journalists they're not really in tune with female boxing, and they kind of, like, you know, shrug their shoulders, and they say, like, you know. But with that being streamed and fight fans having a chance of taking a glimpse with Julio Diaz Jr., too, on that card and yourself, I thought it was a great way of the introduction of showing how females sometimes can get it down, too. I mean, was that also part of the reason why you decided to go hard with her and take – I mean, you took some tremendous shots, too, as well.
Yes, of course. But we were the fight of the night.
Yeah. You guys were the talk of the night.
Yeah, that's exactly what I wanted to prove, exactly what I wanted to do. I wanted to have people saying my name at the end of the night, so, you know, and remember me the next day and weeks to come, you know. So that was my point to prove. I wanted to show that Boxing 360 has a world champion for a reason, you know. I train hard. I fight hard. I fight with all my heart. So it was just to prove to everybody that us females, we go out there and we fight with everything.
Yeah,
and not to take anything away from Ella Nunes, because she was there to the last second of the last round, and it was a hard round. If you saw the pictures afterwards, you can tell.
I know. You know, for a minute I thought she was going to fall over. I mean, I keep thinking that I'm like, man, there's got to be a point where she's going to give up or you're going to break her will, but she just kept coming. I mean, I think they should make you guys fight for a fifth time.
Oh my God, that's the Puerto Rican in us. You know, that's our Spanish blood that kept us up fighting.
I mean, that was great. You went 6 rounds with her, and you stopped her in 4. And the first time you guys had a split draw, a 4-rounder. How important, though, for you? You went 8 rounds. It was your first time going that kind of distance. How important was it for you to go 8 rounds? And was it kind of nice, or nice is probably a terrible word for it, but there was a kind of a safety factor in knowing you already knew her very, very well from fighting her. So going those 8 rounds, was there an extra confidence, I guess, going 8 rounds with somebody you were so familiar with?
Yes. And we knew, we took Ella because we knew she was going to give us 8 rounds. We knew she was going to give us 8 hard rounds, not just 8 rounds, but we knew we was going to go there and we was going to fight from round 1 to round 8. So it was a great test. She was, you know, I mean, with Ella Nunes, it's hard because, you know, she's, you never know which Ella Nunes is coming. And this one was the tough and in shape Ella. So she gave us a great, great fight. And this, the 8-rounder was excellent for me. You know, it gave me a boost of confidence just to know that I will be able to go another 2 rounds with anybody else. You know, to go 10 rounds for a world title, like I'm going with Frieda Wahlberg in 3 weeks, I know I'm definitely going to be there at the 10th round.
Let's talk about that fight. What do you know about her?
Well, I know she was a great amateur. You know, she's the biggest thing in Sweden. But like I tell everybody, she's a female fighter. I'm a female fighter. So I say, let's go. I don't care. I really don't care too much about, you know, my fighters. I mean, who I'm fighting. I say, you know, if she's a female, I'm going in there. I'm fighting.
You know, you're a young fighter. For being a title holder, you know, you've got, 15 fights at this point. How do you think you've grown during this period, particularly this last year where 2011 you fought, seven times or six times? How have you changed during this period of time?
Well, I believe I changed a lot. I've learned a lot in and out the ring. We worked on a lot of boxing, and I've always had the brawling in me. So now we have both. So no matter what my opponent brings to the ring that night, I'm always able to readjust myself. If I need to box, if I need to brawl. So boxing to me is still a learning game. I'm still learning every single day. To this day, I'm learning every fight. I'm learning. So I think I've grown a lot. Like you said, I fought a lot thanks to Boxing 360. This is the best year. I've won the NABF. I won the IBF, and soon to be WBC. But this was the greatest year. And like I said, I'm still learning. I'm still learning.
I know you're a bit of a student of the game, and you're a fan of the sport. One of the people we've talked about that you kind of remind me of, the male counterpart, is James Kirkland. You both are southpaws. You both like to wear the black and red, and you both are just highly aggressive. Did you see his last fight, and what did you think about that? He looked a little undertrained, like he didn't quite bring it the way he should have in training camp. And can you learn anything from watching somebody that you admire?
I didn't get to watch his last fight. I saw the fight with Angulo. I saw that fight. That fight was, to me, was awesome. You know, he has so much heart, and that's the type of fights that I like, and that's the type of fight that I wanted to bring with the Ella Nunez fight. Fights like that's a fan favorite fight. But his last fight, I didn't get to watch. But I know he has the heart of gold, and that's the type of stuff that I want to take from fighters. Just any tough fighter, I like to take a little piece of that in the ring with me.
And thinking of that, you know, you're traveling overseas. I don't think you've ever done that before.
No.
Are you worried about that? You know, that you got to knock this girl out, or you generally knock people out anyways. You got 9 knockouts and 14 wins, but do you think you got to drop her and really beat the hell out of her in order to get this decision?
Well, that's what I'm training for. I mean, you know, you can always go out for the knockouts because it never comes that way. But I'm training really, really hard. I'm hitting the bag hard. I'm running more. So I'm ready. I'm ready. Like I said, I told someone before that she better be willing to kill me in there or be willing to die because I'm going there to be killed or to kill. So no matter what comes out of the fight, I'm going to be there every second of every round.
That sounds a little bit like James Kirtland. Well, there you go.
Yeah. Well, just the last thing is just now you know also with that last fight, the 8 rounds, that if you don't get them out of there, you have other answers. That must be kind of comforting to you.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Like, that fight, like I said, was such a boost of confidence for me. I just know I'm going to be there. A lot of people had doubt, can she handle that pressure for all those rounds? And I answered that question. Yes, I can. And I'll be fighting even harder at the eighth or tenth round. Whichever the end of the round is, I'll be there fighting.
Well, there we go. Boxing 360, Amanda Serrano with us here on Leaving the Ring. Amanda, thank you very much for speaking to us, and all the best of luck for your upcoming fight.
No, thank you so much for having me on, and I hope to be back on very soon.
Our pleasure. Okay. We hope to have you on.
Oh, thank you so much. Have a good night.
You too.
Okay, bye.
I like her answers. I like her attitude. I like the way she fights. I thought that the last fight that was streamed by Boxing 360, which they got to do that again so that fight fans could have a chance to see her. And not even that, all the fighters on their staple, get a chance to see the fighters that they do pick up and sign, and everybody can have a great night of boxing. A lot of promoters should do that, you know. Just give the fight fans a chance to stream it, watch it, and see what they're producing out of their fight camps, you know. Fight fans, if you want to call in, definitely can. 347-215-7598. You can speak to myself, Dave Duenas, and Gabriel Montoya here on Leaving the Ring. We're going to keep it moving. We got a lot of interviews here to do here on Leaving the Ring. And then we got a lot of stuff to talk about. We got some weekend fights coming up. Rios, Marquez, ESPN, the whole works. But let's get our second guest here. Armenio Reyes here on Leaving the Ring with us. Let's see, he's back from his weigh-in. Him and Alan Sanchez were doing their weigh-in today. Be done, and we should have a chance to speak to him.
Hello.
Armenio, how you doing, brother? It's Dave Duenas and Gabriel Montoya from Leave the Ring.
Hey, how you doing?
Fantastic. Hey, first off, man, our condolence about what's happened to your father. You know, all our prayers, and I think all the fight fans are behind you all the way, brother. And, you know, it's a tough deal to deal with. And, man, true warrior, you're getting in there.
No, thank you. I appreciate it. You know, I appreciate the condolences from you guys and everybody around who's been showing their love to me for the time.
You know, let me ask you this, because immediately I know that there's going to be some fight fans, they're going to go like, you know, well, this just happened. How can he get in the ring, and is he going to be focused? Wouldn't this affect his performance, especially against a guy that's 6'1", that seemingly you had problems with the first time around when you guys fought at the Doubletree? What do you say to those the naysayers and the doubters right now that are saying that this may be a huge distraction for you?
No distraction at all. You know, it's a difficult time, of course, for anybody to lose a relative, especially a father. However, we trained hard for this fight, and I'm going to use this as my motivation because, you know, my dad's dream was for me to become a champion. And in order to pass these obstacles, these challenges that are put in front of me, that's what makes me a champion already to begin with, because, you know, him in the condition that he was in, I guarantee you, he would want me to continue moving forward with my career, even if he was in the condition he was in. And I know that's what he wanted me to do. And so that's why we're doing that and continuing with this fight. You know, the motivation is there. Just the preparation was there. You know, we trained hard for this fight. And I know he's going to be in my corner, in my heart, and around with us, you know, as my guy, Angel, to guide me through this fight, because we're ready to go and ready to do this 10-round fight.
You know, bro, everybody grieves their certain way. Taking on the match and moving forward and facing Alan Sanchez, is that going to be your grieving period, or have you had a chance to fit that in your busy and tough schedule?
No, I've already grieved, you know, Monday and Tuesday. Monday was the viewing. Tuesday was the burial. We grieved as a family, you know. But again, like I was telling my mom, you know, that chapter is closed. We closed the chapter, and now it's time to open a new chapter and a new book that we're going to start writing, you know, over the lives that we're going to continue moving forward with his memory in our presence, you know, and that's basically what my motto has been, and it will still be, to fight for him, and that's why we've got to keep moving forward and honor him as much as possible.
Absolutely. I'm going to turn it over to my partner.
This is Gabe Montoya with Max Boxing. You know, again, my condolences, Artemio. It's, you know, I really feel for you, and at the same time, hearing your voice, I'm inspired. You know, you seem to be handling this like a man. It's just, there's no manual on how to do an interview like this, so I'm just going to be awkward and just kind of plow through. You know, it losing somebody is a draining emotional experience, and making weight during the week is already a draining emotional experience. You don't sound like either. You sound like you're really ready to go. I mean, how are you able to do that?
Just mentally focused. I couldn't tell you. I don't know. You know, I'm well grounded, in the sense that I'm able to separate my business, which is boxing, from my personal, which is my family. Once I step into the ring, once I step into the gym, for that time that I'm there, I don't worry about anything else. I just concentrate on that. And then once I leave the gym or once I leave a boxing, you know, whatever event, then I'll go ahead and focus on whatever it is that my family needs or my school needs, and vice versa, you know. That's what we're doing here for this fight. You know, we prepared. I didn't, you know, my previous fight in February 24th, I didn't let myself balloon up in weight. But this whole training camp, I was at 150, 152 pounds max. you know, so I didn't have anything really to lose to make weight tonight.
You know, you've come off this really big win with Javier Molina, and then you went right out and knocked somebody out, Victor Correa, in the first round back in February. You just felt like you, as a fighter, you've just gone to a different level. You finally figured out something about yourself?
I would say yes, in a sense. I've developed into a much more well-rounded fighter, especially with the guidance of Ruben Castanon. You know, we've developed as a much more of a team, you know, and it's helping me become a better fighter all around. Now I'm not just looking for one punch. You know, now we're going out there working. And, you know, at the work rate that we work in the gym, that transcends into the boxing ring because my punch output has increased from my previous fight till now, where I'm throwing about 100 punches around.
I'd like to talk a little bit about this rematch here, you know, because first off, when it was announced, a lot of folks were like, "Woo, this is going to be a good fight," because the first one was really good. What gave you problems in that first fight? I mean, this guy's 6'1". Was it the tallness? But at the same time, he doesn't really fight like a tall guy. He doesn't really use that whole lot of reach. I notice he likes to mix it up, get in the pocket. But in your opinion, what was the problem and what's going to be the difference this time around?
I don't think there was really much of a problem the first time around. You know, it was just my first fight being with Ruben as my trainer, so we're still trying to get well acquainted with each other. And I just, you know, went out there, fought him as hard as I could, you know. In the fifth round, I wasn't hurt. He hit me with a shot in my eye where my eye closed up real quick, and I had double vision for about a minute in the fifth round, so that's why I was backing up. You know, once I was able to see him again, then I started attacking. But, you know, other than that, I think this fight is going to see me being more active than I was that fight. My conditioning is 100% tenfold versus that time. And also my head movement, you know, I'll be able to fit more punches than I did the first fight. That's, I think, what was the defining factor in my victory in that six-round fight was my ability to slip his punches versus him not being able to slip mine.
You think, too, that first fight only being, you know, a short amount of rounds, was the big problem, and this time I believe it's what's going 10 rounds or more.
Yeah, we're doing a 10-round fight today.
Right? Do you think that's going to be the difference? Because there wasn't a chance of really going into the deep waters the first time around.
Well, the first time around, we were both young. We were both only six fights into our professional careers. So, of course, I think he had a little more rounds than I did because I had the five knockouts and he only had the two. So I guess that was my first time going a full-length six-round fight. And it was a good experience. You know, I learned a lot from that fight. And now having it being a 10-round fight where I went the eight-round distance with Javier Molina, I just stopped on punches all eight rounds. So I'm just going to increase that two more rounds and do the same thing.
You know, and I noticed, too, that he hasn't gone past eight rounds. Is it part of the plan to see where he's at in the later rounds, or is it part of the plan of just trying to get him out of there so that he can't build the momentum, he can't use the height, and he can't use the reach?
Well, what we're going to do is we're going to dig into his body from round one all the way up until the end of the fight. You know, if we're able to wear him out early, then that's what we're going to do.
I'm sorry, brother. You broke up. What was that?
Yeah, I'm sorry about that. What we're going to do is attack his body from start to finish, you know, wear him out. And he's able to go out early, then we'll take him out early. If not, then we're prepared for the long haul. I hope he is too because, you know, I've shown that I could last eight rounds, and he hasn't gone eight round distance yet, so we'll be up there and we'll make sure that we extend it to 10 rounds.
Very interesting fight.
It really is.
It's going to be exciting.
The first time that you guys fought, were you with Thompson Boxing at that point? Because it was at Doubletree.
It was at the Doubletree, but I wasn't actually a signed fighter yet. You could say that was the test fight. Because I guess the winner was the one that got signed, which was me. After that, I became a Thompson fighter.
That's what's interesting. I think that Alex Kompanova is one of the best matchmakers in the sport. He's kind of an unsung hero as far as matchmakers go. And for him to make this fight again, I really think that it, not to kiss your ass or anything, but I think it says a lot about you and where he thinks you are in your development, that he's willing to go back to this guy that gave you trouble early on and kind of see exactly where you're at. Do you look at it that way as a chance to kind of erase, not really a blemish because you didn't lose, but it was a close fight that could have gone either way, Is it a way for you to erase that, or is it a way to kind of see, to kind of go back to a guy that was a test and really see exactly where you are right now?
Yeah, you can see it from both ways. Trying to gauge where I've advanced from that fight to this fight, and also just to go ahead and clear up any doubters. You know, because the three doubters at the ringside were the judges. You know, one of them was the one that scored it for him. I mean, that's what we're meant to do, go out there and dominate on the national level so everybody can see again what I can do in the ring, you know, and I'm willing to take the match. You know, if he took it, you know, fine, let's do another good show, especially because our first fight was a war, and this one is going to be another war, especially for ESPN. It's going to be a great TV fight.
It is, man. I'm really excited about this fight. Not just, you know, having Michael Casillas, I think anytime you put him on a card, it's going to be exciting. But then putting you guys on that as well, it's just going to make an excellent Friday night fight. And ESPN has been lacking. I think they stepped up. When the passing of your father, though, did anybody in the camp or anybody from Thompson come to you and say, hey, I think we shouldn't take this. Maybe we should just pass on this for the moment?
They left it in my hands. My entire team, my promotional staff asked me, what is it that you want to do? You let us know and we'll do it. So it was basically my decision on my part. I sat around, I thought about it, and I figured, you know, my dad wanted me to continue moving forward. I'll let my family know, and they're all 100% behind my decision and, you know, going forward with this fight.
Absolutely.
I'm just blown away by your attitude, man. I mean, I still have my folks, and I lost my grandfather, who I was really close to, and I can't even imagine what you're going through, and yet here you are. You just sound so solid, dude. And I guess probably you would attribute that because you've been taking care of your family so long, and you've got to grow up a lot sooner than a lot of people have. Would you agree that that's where this maturity has come from?
Exactly.
You've been dealing with this for years. Yep.
No, yeah, I agree with you 100%, you know. I had to grow up from one day to the next, you know. One day I was a 21-year-old kid, to the next day I was a 21-year-old man, and that has helped me now to be more matured and more calm, you know, and everything that's going on around my life.
I also kind of see that this is what our sport is like, you know, this is what it demands, you know what I mean? Our sport is a very selfish sport sometimes, and this kind of shows the discipline. The discipline that you have as an athlete, you know, not just as a person, but as an athlete and able to kind of muster through these emotions and to really control them and know exactly what you need to do out there. And I think that's why I always praise fighters, and I always say you got to have a special certain thing about you. And I don't think everybody can do what you do for a living. It's not made for other folks.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate it. You know, yeah, it's a difficult profession, being in boxing, you know. It takes a lot of determination, willpower to get into the ring and fight anybody. And, you know, hey, I give 110% as much as my effort does and my will to keep on every fight.
There you go. Armando the King Reyes with us on Leaving the Ring. He's going to be fighting Friday night in the rematch against Alan Santos from Fairfield, California. I know a lot of fight fans from the Bay are trying to pull for Alan Santos. But I think a lot of fight fans, and even the ones that are from the Fairfield community, are rooting for the King. Hey, brother, thanks for calling in, man, and appreciate it. Can't wait to have you on again. It's always a pleasure. And like I said, our condolences with you. Our prayers are with your family. And we're going to be rooting along the side with the rest of the fans on Friday night fights when you're on Mixing It Up with Alan Santos.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Thank you for giving me the time to be on air with you guys again.
All right, brother. You take
care. My pleasure, man.
You guys have a good one. Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
God, you know, you got to respect that, man.
Dude.
You just got to respect that. That is a tough deal, Gabe, you know?
That blows my mind. It just – I remember the very first time I talked to him, I did like a one-on-one on the phone with him, and I was struck by his maturity, and I didn't know his story. I didn't know about his dad, and it blew me away when he started to tell me, and I was just like, wow, you know, this guy's been more than an adult, you know. I mean, like, most adults couldn't handle what he's had to handle, you know, handling the family business, taking care of his father, the day-to-day care of his father, and to have it happen at a fight where it is a test fight, and it's a rematch with a guy that already knows his style, that gave him trouble before. It's on TV, you know, it's underneath Cat Sidious, which is, you know, like I said, Friday Night Fights has been in a slump,
Right.
They're kind of looking to this card to revitalize them heading into the rest of the year. And his dad passes. I mean, it's just unbelievable.
It's tough.
And listen to the way he's handling it. Man, I can only hope that I'm not strong. That's amazing.
Absolutely. And we're going to definitely find out how strong he is. He's fighting a very tough opponent. Kid that's coming out of Fairfield, a lot of people that are very high on him, Alan Sanchez, and like I said, gave him a run for his money to Armelio Reyes, and a lot of folks thought that Alan should have been the victor in that fight. But we kind of look at their career right now, and you see Alan kind of went on a stump. I wouldn't say, he kept moving forward, but you could see Reyes was just being more consistent and being moved a lot.
Hello.
Yeah, can we please speak to Alan Sanchez?
Hey, Alan Sanchez. Okay, wait a minute.
Okay.
Hello?
Hello, is this Alan Sanchez?
Yeah.
Alan, this is Dave Duenas with my co-host Gabriel Montoya from Max Boxing. This is Leaving the Ring Radio. How you doing, sir?
Yeah, I'm doing good. Great.
Hey,
waiting for the wait.
Are you still waiting to weigh in?
Yeah, it's been a long time.
Oh, man, I bet you that sucks. I know you're grinding your teeth, man.
I feel good. Do you?
Well, first, we'll do this really quick because I'm pretty sure they're going to haul you away to get you in your weigh-in. We just got off the phone with Emilio Reyes. We talked about this is the second time you guys are going to go at it. A lot of fight fans felt that you should have been the victor the first time around. This time, you guys are kind of, different places, different spots. Reyes has been fighting a little bit more, but you've been consistent in your own right. What is going to be different? It was 8 rounds before. This time it was 6 rounds before. This time it's 10. But what's going to be the difference in this fight?
Well, it's going to be a lot of difference because when the first fight I fought with him, I was 18. I was 18 years old,
uh-huh.
And now I'm 21, and I feel stronger. And we already know Artemio Reyes, so I think we're gonna box him the first couple of rounds. Then we're gonna start going in to the fight and trying to knock him out in the sixth round. So because we know like he's gonna get tired.
You know what I noticed, Alan? First off, you're a very tall Mexicano, but what I noticed is that almost in the same breath of like Diego Corrales or all the tall fighters like, Hearns, you don't like to fight tall. You don't really like to use your jab. You like to kind of mix it up. You like to stay in that pocket. Do you think that is the best thing to do with Reyes because he's been successful in knocking out opponents? Or do you change your style? Do you change who you are and fight tall and use your jab and use your reach?
Well, I think I'm going to fight smarter this time and because he got power in the first couple of rounds. So that's what I'm saying. In the first rounds, we're going to move more, throw more jabs. We're going to box him more. Then later, like in the sixth round, we're going to start going in and make the fight make pressure.
I'm going to pass it over to my co-host. Gabriel, you there, brother?
I am. Welcome to the show, Alan. And we'll try to get through this quickly because you're about to make weight. You guys kind of met at a crossroads, at the DoubleTree back in 2010. The winner was going to get signed, and the guy was going to have to work hard to get signed. How do you think? Is there an emotional feeling in this? Do you want to get revenge for that? For that loss, is there an emotional feeling here heading into this fight?
It was hard to listen, but it doesn't really bother me because I love with him. I'm just gonna show him this time, like I can beat him and I'm better than him, because the first fight, we went to his town, and now we're fighting in Vegas, so it's kind of like equal.
Sure.
And, yeah, we're ready for him.
How do you think you've changed? You've had 5 fights since then. How do you think you've grown as a fighter? I mean, you said that you're now older now, but as a fighter, I mean, what tools have you added?
Excuse me? What's heart condition?
As a fighter, how do you think you've changed since that fight? What things have you added to your game?
Well, I think I'm stronger and faster now, and I'm older. I already grew up. I'm 21. In the first fight, I was 18.
I was going to ask, Alan, do you feel like going into this fight, because now that Reyes is kind of more of a well-known fighter, do you think that you have to knock him out, not outbox him, but take him to the deep waters and try to drown him?
Yeah, I think we're going to try to find that and try to knock him out so we don't, so that judges don't have an answer. They just went for a knockout.
Do you think that Reyes has been far one of your toughest matches? I mean, because you've got in with Cristian Favela, you've been in with Clint Cornell, who's a tough guy that's under the tutelage of the Guerrero camp. But then you got in with Alberto Herrera.
Can you call me in a couple minutes? Because they call me in my name to weigh out.
Yeah, go right ahead. Go for it, Alan.
All right, thank you. I appreciate it.
No problem. Alan Sanchez here with us. He had to go because they're calling him in for his weigh-in that he's going to be on Friday Night Fights against Armenio Reyes, the King. This is going to be a great fight. This is going to be a really good fight. I know a lot of folks are not really aware of Alan Sanchez, but the people over here in the Bay and you know, the boxing zombies of the world, they know about him. He's got a great ledger of names that he's faced. Cristian Favela is a true warrior, is a guy that comes to fight. It's been a stepping, stone for fighters, but he's one of those guys that if in any given night, if you're off, trust me, you're going to be off with Cristian. His recent fight with Alberto Herrera, who's the younger brother of Mauricio Herrera, who's going to be fighting Michael Alvarado on the undercard of the Rios and Marquez pay-per-view fight. He went 8 rounds with them. So, you know, this kid, Alan Sanchez, is definitely is no slump. He's the real deal. And this is a great matchup for both of these guys. This is a great matchup for Reyes to find out whether or not that there is a maturity and change, not in attitude, but in change in his boxing skills, you know, going in a second time around with Alan Sanchez. Also to find out if Alan Sanchez, was it because he was 18 and this time around it's because he's 21 and there's going to be a difference there. We don't know.
Yeah, I'm curious. And the thing I was just about to ask him, I was curious if he'd seen the Javier Molina fight and if he thought that Reyes had changed as a fighter at all, or if this is the same guy that he fought. You know, is he impressed by how he's grown? But you know, I think he seems very focused, and he's also, you know, he's about to make weight, so he's probably really hungry. And
yeah,
it'd be hard.
Really,
that just freaks me out. I don't think Reyes has made weight yet, and that dude just sounded perfectly fine. I typed to you. I'm like, I'm probably going to go with Artemio by KO. I just, the maturity level, the way he's talking, how clearly, I mean, it's clear that Sanchez has a game plan, but I think Artemio is really coming into his own, and he really understands exactly who he is, which I always think is a very important thing, a fighter understanding their own identity and their own powers and their own weaknesses. I don't know. You know, I think that for a guy that does, he's had some quality rounds. Like you're pointing out, the guys that he's faced have been, you know, they haven't been slouches. But I don't know. I just how articulate they were, maybe that's what's throwing me. But I could be just speaking on emotion here. I don't know. But I do know it's going to be a hell of a fight. It's going to be fun.
You know, I think that, I'm not going to say that I think you're wrong at all. I think there's a strong possibility that Reyes can stop him, and I'm gonna give you my reasons. Okay, for one, he's never been past 8 rounds. Going into a fight with Armenio Reyes, who's been there, and who's knocked out 12 of his 15 opponents, and you know Alan Sanchez only got 3 KOs, but he's also I think he's an underrated puncher. Because he has fought some guys that can take punches. You know what makes me impressed about Alan, is that he stopped a kid that I've witnessed, and I thought that had the goods and is a big, strong guy. That, but it could have played into the fact that he moved down in weight, going down to 147. Is Clint Cornell, who is from the Guerrero camp, who's a natural 154 or 160, and has kind of fluctuated in his weight. But that to me is a big plus when I see that he stopped him in seven rounds. Where this guy has been in with some tough guys. He's a tough customer, you know. Fighting Herrera is another great matchup. Christian Favela is a great matchup, you know. And if you look at his, this is what I look at too. At the same time, is that if you look after the first match with Reyes, he did stay very consistent. It didn't seem like he went and fought some guys that were you know, they had 15 losses and haven't been in the ring for 2 to 3 years, you know. They threw him in with guys that were live bodies, guys that were going to see where he was at in this point of his career. And then that all can kind of stem to management and matchmaking, because they don't have the right people behind them, so they have to kind of take on whatever fight, so they become just the opponent. But at the same time, when you get him back in with another guy that's almost modeled in that same type of system, you end up getting a great match. But you got to look at Reyes being the much more seasoned, more polished, and I think at the same time we can just be safe to say he's been in those deep waters. He's been in that position where Alan Sanchez is going to find out where he's at after that eighth round.
Yeah, it's gonna be one of those testings. It's a test fight. I love fights like this, you know.
Oh, I love.
I was interested about Alex Kompanova, if he was one that okayed this, and he's a guy that really, you know, I think a big part of matchmaking is, you know, a lot of times there's these gimme fights, you know, like we talk about the Fight Night Club. A lot of these are kind of quote unquote mismatches. And really, if you took them off TV, you know, I've been thinking a lot about those fights. If you took them off TV. There's kind of like tiers to building fighters. Club shows, which is a Fight Night Club, is a club show. That's why it's called a club. It really is. But it's Golden Boy, and they've got that cachet, so they worked out a TV deal. So a lot of times, what you're seeing is what you would see at a normal club show that's not televised. A young guy that's like got less than 10 fights fighting a guy with probably more than 10 fights, but maybe not 10 wins in those 10, you know, in those 20 fights that he's got. And a good matchmaker knows how to feed your guy, your young fighter, confidence, feed him those kind of fighters for 10 fights or so. But then they'll mix in, maybe they'll steadily raise it as the rounds raise, the, you know, the competition level, and then they'll mix in that test fight, which obviously this one was for both of those guys. And the guy that passes the test, he gets signed. And then you kind of go back to a couple soft fights and you build them back up to another plateau. You test him again to see where you're at, and depending on how he does, then you move forward from there. And that's kind of how you build a career towards a world title holder or even a regional title holder. A series of plateaus, and you kind of either, you know, curl back or you roll forward. I think this fight is exactly what it is. It's a test. We want to see exactly where both guys are, see how Reyes reacts to fighting a guy he's fought before who's an awkward style, see if he's really grown and matured as a fighter. And maybe Alan Sanchez gets a chance to get signed again if he pulls out the win. It's a really fun fight. I think it's going to be – Friday night, I think, is going to be arguably the better night of fights. I think both of them are very competitive, not quite sure who's going to win. I have a sense of who I think will win, but I couldn't tell you 100% on either one of those fights. The next night, you know, we'll get to that. They're a little more – of the showcase variety, but not outright mismatches either. You know, if the A sides didn't bring their A game to training, hey, you know, anything can happen. Like
really,
everybody's dangerous in boxing. You know,
really quick. You know, because we have everybody that tunes in, listens to Leave the Ring, and they'll either text us or Facebook us or follow us on Twitter. And one of the manager guys that have Alan Sanchez, he just texts me and he says, I'll bet the both of you guys $20 each that Alan Sanchez beats Reyes. And I said, yeah, sure, why not? Let's do it.
That would not be ethical of me to bet. But bragging rights, I'll take it. You know,
bragging rights, let's go for it. You know, and he's claiming, you know, Alan was robbed the first fight, And you know what? He's not alone. We did mention that here on Leaving the Ring,
yeah.
Is that a lot of folks thought Alan Sanchez did win that first fight. And, you know, unfortunately, I seen the fight, but it was a while back. I couldn't find it, man. Any fight fan can send that fight to me. The first one with Alan Sanchez and Reyes, send it to me because I couldn't find it on YouTube. I just had a tough time. Maybe Sweet Boxing may have it. I don't know. But if they could just send me a link, you know.
Yeah.
You know, could send me something and we can just review it and stuff because, like I said, a lot of folks thought that Alan Sanchez should have had that fight under his banner, not on Reyes's. So,
I'll put a beer. How about that? I'll bet a beer.
What a 12 pack.
I don't think I could lose my Boxing Writers Association card if I bet a beer.
How about a 12 pack?
I don't really drink that much beer, so I'll bet a beer. But you can
you have the beer.
If you want.
You have the beer, and I have the rest of the 11. How about that?
That's what works for me. I mean, it's not I'm not disrespecting the fighter. I hope he doesn't take it that way. And honestly, look at him. 6'1", 76-inch reach. I mean, that's, for this weight class, he's a big man.
Yeah.
He's going to be a problem. If he sticks to that game plan of boxing early, because remember, Javier Molina, he was having a lot of success early on, outboxing Artemio, moving, using that jab. And then there was kind of a line of demarcation that got crossed by Artemio. And suddenly Molina decided to start fighting on the inside, and totally wrong game plan. And just the physicality, I think the strength. Javier Molina is a younger guy, not quite as strong as a 25-year-old or a 24-at-the-time-year-old Artemio Reyes. And you can see that physicality. Almost like a margarita. You let that guy into your kitchen and start, making whatever he wants, eventually he's going to make himself a victory, and that's what he did. So I'll be really curious to see if Sanchez keeps him on the end of that jab, like he said, and kind of then, at some point starts to go in after he softened him up and tries to finish him off by the sixth round, like he said. It was really surprising he would just say his game plan like that, but, I kind of applaud that, too. I was arguing somebody last week about how fighters don't let people see sparring anymore, a couple weeks back.
Yeah.
So that was kind of funny. We were arguing about Floyd not letting people see sparring, and then literally the next week, all of a sudden, Floyd started letting people see sparring, which kind of freaked me out a little bit. But, you can let a guy know what you're going to do to him. You can let him see your sparring. It's all about, is he going to be able to do anything about it? I respect Sanchez for saying, you know what, this is what I'm going to do to this guy. It's up to him to try to make me not do it.
Absolutely.
I can't wait. It's going to be a good fight.
Let's pass it to some fight fans, man. I want to talk about this weekend fights here on Leaving the Ring. Let's, man, we got a lot of calls, but let's go down the line. Let's go with Frank from California who wants to talk about the weekend fights. What's up, brother? You're on live right now on Leaving the Ring. What's on your mind?
What's going on, man? First off, great show, guys. I haven't heard this well-tuned of a show in a long time.
Hey, thanks,
Gabe,
man.
You're my motherfucking dog. I love Gabe. That's the man right there in the West Coast. You know me, I'm a big fight fan. We always talk shit back and forth to each other. Big fan of the show, man. This is my first time tuning in. And this weekend, we got a loaded card. A lot of people are dissing it. I'm dissing it only because it's on pay-per-view and our networks aren't picking them up. We pay these ridiculous amount of cable bills, this and that. And, I'm not trying to complain because every pay-per-view is a Super Bowl and we have to pay for our Super Bowl. So, it's kind of a slap in the face, but Marquez, Rios, Alvarado, it's definitely going to be a well worth card to get. I think Alvarado has his hands full. I know he's been training hard down over in East L.A. with the boys. But Alvarado's got a lot of heart, and I think that's what wins him the fight at the end of the day. But we're going to see a hell of a war. I think that fight steals the show that night. But, I don't know what you guys think. I think Marquez is going to have a breeze through with Shevchenko. And Rios, man, he's just a dog. I'd rather not see Rios and Marquez, but I'd rather see Marquez and Morales because I think that's one for the ages So that's one of our only few pay-per-views legitimate out there that I would still purchase.
I don't know. This card, on one hand, my first instinct is to always say, it shouldn't be on pay-per-view, but to steal Steve's line, it's a necessary evil sometimes. One,
these guys got to fight. You got to keep them busy. That's a promoter's job. Too often these guys wait around, you know, for their two fights a year on HBO or their two fights on Showtime. And I think the sport as a whole has been watered down. The fighters have been watered down. They don't fight enough. You know, I know, you know, they can only take so much of a beating, but you kind of lose some of your sharpness by not fighting very often. But then, at the same time, you know, this was, if I got to blame anybody for you guys having to pay all this money for not quite the card that you wanted, we got to blame Yuri Gamboa. Because how excited will we be tonight with a Friday night fight card with Michael Katsidis and Artemio Reyes versus Alan Sanchez? Really good
right.
fights, and then the next night we get Yuri Gamboa versus Brandon Reyes. I'll tell you right now, I'd be doing this show from a Vegas hotel room right now. I wouldn't be doing it from my LA apartment. But Gamboa got cold feet, he backed out, and asked to sit in LA because I'm not going to pay to go see showcase fights. But you know, at the same time.
Now you guys are hierarchies in the media, so you guys have to watch everything you say. I don't. I'm a fight
yeah.
fan, and I'll speak my mind. And we could blame quite a yeah, you do. If you want that proper interview, you gotta tippy toe sometimes.
No, I gotta disagree with you on that, pal. Because I've had my credentials revoked, and I'm not gonna get into it on the show because I'm working it out. But I've had my credentials
revoked.
That's
why revoked I got that left easy. I'm not talking to you. I'm just saying, like, as far as like the bullshit goes, you know what I mean? Al Heyman, all these HBO guys, Jim Lampley
yeah.
has his hand in it a little further than he should. He's a commentator at the end of the day that can repeat boom, 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 and boom.
Yeah.
And, you know, at the end of the day, man, it's the us that are paying for it and us fight fans that make this work. Back in the day, we had Tuesday, Wednesday, Friday, Saturday night fights.
Oh,
now we
yeah.
get the occasional Friday night fight and maybe a good fight on HBO, maybe, possibly, if we don't see a corrupt bullshit decision. You know what I mean? So,
yeah.
I don't know, man. These guys, Golden Boy, Bob Arum, Heyman, Dabella in some cases, most definitely, and that guy down in the WBC, I don't even want to mention his name. It's not that I don't know it, but he's just a despicable bastard. But I love the show. Keep going.
It is a little impressive. I will agree with what you're saying. You know, like, I've mentioned it on Twitter. I'll mention it on the show because I never have. But, you know, Max Kellerman, Dan Raphael, I believe Jim Lampley, they all have the same agent, Freddie Roach. They all have the same agent, a guy named Nick Khan. And I find it interesting, you know, isn't that a conflict of interest? You guys all have the same agent. You know, Freddie's show was produced by Jim Lampley.
Mm-hmm.
They share the same agent. And then they got to call a fight and do it objectively. I mean, people get all up in my ass about bias and this and that. You know, you worked out at the wild card or you're working out next to Katsidis at the Fortune Gym. You know, how can you be objective? Like, I'm the same dude wherever I go. You give me a free slice of chicken and a ticket to a fight, I'm still going to tell you exactly what I thought about the fight. You know, I do find it odd, you know, when you kind of go, how can you be objective when if you said something terrible about Freddie in a fight and the guy turns around, you may get a call from your mutual agent. Hey, man, why don't you ease up a little bit? You're hurting our wallet. That call can happen. And I do find that interesting, you know, that I don't consider Lampley a journalist, though, either. I don't consider Max Kellerman a journalist, either. He's not. He's a commentator. It's a little bit different, but I hear what you're saying. I mean, it's tough. I mean, this weekend, you know, $45 ain't nothing to sneeze at. I mean, you know, somebody wants to bet me $20, I got to check my wallet and make sure I got $20 sometimes, you know?
That's a whole month of membership at my club in downtown Fullerton, seriously? Like, it's, you know?
There you go. Hell yeah.
Anytime you want, Gabe, you got to come down to my cigar lounge. The boys are all down there. We always talk about you
down.
When we see your arrival.
Absolutely. In fact, I keep telling you, I got to come down and I'm going to grab Steve and we're going to head down. I don't smoke anymore, but I would definitely come down and probably.
I'll give you other reasons to come down there.
don't do that. All right, Frank. Hey, thanks, man.
Hey, listen, I want to cuss one more time on your show. I got to say, fuck Peter Quillen. The guy's a bitch. And I want him tested for steroids immediately. He looks like a miniature Leon Spinks. And that's that about that. If you guys could put me on hold after this so I can listen to all the great comments afterwards, I'd love you guys. Thanks a lot.
Right,
you
got to
call more often, Frank. You got to call more often. All right, brother.
Oh, you know that Peter Quillen, by the way.
I got to tell you a story.
That Peter's going to start tweeting right now. I've been set up! That was a setup!
I got to tell you a story about Frank. It took me a second to realize. I was like, oh, it's Frank. I met Frank at, jeez, I forget which fight it was. I think it was Mosey Mayorga. And Frank is a very large man. And if you've ever met me, I'm not a large man. I'm about 5'9". I'm a 140 on a good day. And
yeah.
And we were having a couple of drinks before the show, before the fights. And we got in an argument. I think it was about Williams Margarito. And you know me, and Frank knows me now. I'm one of those people that doesn't back off from a fight. I don't care how big you are or how much you think you know, I'm going to keep going. And Frank and I almost came to blows, and Ernie Gavione from Boxing Lab, our old co-host, had to kind of walk me away because it was going to get brutal. And I think now we've become better friends because we had this argument. But Frank is one of those guys that knows that I don't back off of an argument. Neither does he. He's really a true fight fan. And anytime you go down to the fights in SoCal, you're going to see Frank at them. So I'm glad that he got a chance to call into the show. He's somebody who always puts a smile on my face whenever I encounter him. So I got to come down there and get me a cigar and a drink.
Definitely. Got to get us both a cigar, you know, and you know that I'm a cigar man. I'm always drinking cigars on the weekend, you know, Monte Carlo, you name it. And, you know, we got a few more minutes before we call in Ronnie Rios, who's from the Espinosa Boxing Camp. Let's patch in another fight fan, man. I want to talk boxing here on Leaving the Ring. We're going down the line, so just stay on hold. Be patient, and we'll patch you on through. Let's go with CT, who wants to talk Rios and Abreu of the fight that's going to be happening on pay-per-view this Saturday night. What's up, brother? You're on live right now on Leaving the Ring.
Hey, what's up, guys? How you doing?
Good.
That was funny as hell, miniature Leon Spinks. I was sitting here dying when I heard him say that. I think it's kind of good with, you know, Richard Abreu. How do you say his last name? Abreu. I think it's kind of good what he did. You know, I think a lot of fighters who are interim champions should do what he did, you know, go to the press conference, show up there and, you know, ask for your title shot. You know, people that have been waiting for the title shot should do the same thing that he did. Is he an interim champion or something like that?
Richard Abreu, yeah, he is. He's the, and it's kind of weird, too, because you look at
it. Is he the
like,
interim champion?
He is, in fact, the interim WBA lightweight champion. Yeah.
Okay.
That's what was funny, because Leo was like, well, who the hell is this guy? That's like,
yeah, I know.
This is the guy that's got your old belt, you know. Although he had it, this is what's so weird, is Rios didn't get stripped till December, yet this guy won the interim WBA lightweight belt in October. So it's like, these guys just make shit up, you know. That's what's so weird about our sport. We just make rules up. We're like, the WBA has a psychic that's on staff and went, you know, in December, Brandon Rios, like, they got, like, Karnak, you know. He's going to be 139.5. We're like, you know, what is Brandon Rios' weight in December? You know, it's just kind of amazing. And, yes, it's kind of weird how it worked out. And I guess that's why Abreu showed up, was, look, why are you fighting Yuri Gamboa? He wanted to take his shot and say, no, you should be fighting me. And ended up, you know, pimp slapping Brandon Rios, and dude got himself a pay-per-view fight on HBO. So weird,
almost like, yeah, almost like a David Haye. But
hopefully he doesn't have toe issues like David Haye.
I know, but I really think the fight. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, let's say going into that fight, talking about Abreu, you know, going after Rios, and I agree with you. You know, a lot of fighters need to do that. Josie definitely did it. He did it to Danny Garcia, taking the title away from Morales. And but here's the difference, though, is that Rios is just, he's a beast. And he's not a sleeping giant. The kid's a walking giant. And I'm not really sure if he knew how much of a walking giant he's going to get himself involved with. The big question I've always keep mentioning is 135, you know, is that shedding the weight, and I know this time around the camp is saying that they're doing it the right way. It's a much better way system and of how he's making weight. But at the same time, it still goes in the back of your mind. You know, is Abreu getting the right? Is he getting a dehydrated Rios? Is he getting the guy that's struggling? And at the same time, knowing that he got in the mind of Rios, was that a good idea? Gabriel, do you think that's a great idea to get in the mind of a Brandon Rios? But at the same time, this might be a strategy, knowing that Rios may not be able to make that weight. Rios may be struggling to make that weight, and he may get a weaker Rios, and that's what he wanted, was to get him to stick, to make him stick around at 135 so he can get that shot.
That's a good question. I mean, you know, I don't think the book has been, other than, say, you're like a slick defensive fighter who can move really well, I don't think that the blueprint has been written with Brandon Rios yet. I mean, Acosta kind of wrote it a little bit. You can move and punch on him, but don't move too much. Don't let him get into your kitchen. I don't know if pissing off Brandon Rios is really the right idea. Observing him, you know, the fight with Murray, where he had all the trouble, he lost his belt. He looked like an alien trying to make weight. From people I talked to, he was looking bad already like a week and a half, like 10 days out, something like that, from the fight. I think Steve was the one that mentioned it to me, that he'd seen him. He didn't look good. But I remember trying to get an interview with him during that period of time, and he was so bad that I heard that he was slurring, that
right.
He was so dehydrated. You couldn't get him. I couldn't get an interview with him. It wasn't because he didn't want to talk to me. It was because he couldn't talk. Now, this time, I saw him like 2 weeks out from the fight at the Fortune Gym Media Day. And he's joking. His power looked good. His skin color, everything looked fantastic. He was in great spirits. Cecilio Flores, who used to work with Sergio Martinez, is now with him. And they talked about how, you know, they basically changed his diet. I think he was probably eating bad food, you know, fast food or whatever. You know, these guys eat pizza and this and that. I'm not saying he does, but if you don't eat the right things, that weight's just not going to come off.
Absolutely,
I agree. Slow down your metabolism. Like, you know, if you eat cheese or whatever, that's going to clog up the gears, you know. At least certainly does for me. So I just avoid it at all costs. Breads, things like that. Just knowing what grains and what supplements to take, all those types of things. He just didn't know. He was living in the 1960s, you know, for old-school fighters, as opposed to living in 2012. And so now he's living in 2012, and the weight seems to be flying right off. I haven't heard one person tell me that he's having trouble at all making weight. So I think slapping Brandon Rios under these
either he's having trouble making weight, or his camp has got better and not talking about his weight. See, I got to put – Well, brother, stay on hold because we want to talk about the Rios and Abreu fight. But we got to patch in our next guest here on Leaving the Ring. We got to get Ronnie Rios here on with us so we can talk about his past weekend fight on Solo Boxeo. Let's get him on and let's talk to him a little bit. Hopefully he'll answer right now. Ronnie Rios. Won his fight at the Phoenix Club, Anaheim, California, and went the full distance, 8 rounds against Guillermo Sanchez. And
you have reached the Sprint voicemail box of
Rodney.
Rodney. Let's see if I can get him back on here on Leaving the Ring. Throw out his number. You know what I mean? And I always forget. I got to keep my finger on the, you know,
Rodney. God, that is funny. It was funny.
Is this a cell phone? Is this a cell phone?
I don't get like that. You know, I get calls from boxing people or whatever during the day, but it always seems like during radio show, more than any other time, it's like I get hit with like multiple texts,
right.
Twitter, Facebook, like. My shit just lights up. I'm like, do you guys know after like 2 years that Tuesday night?
You have reached
awful.
The Sprint voicemail box of
Ron.
To leave a voice message, press 1.
I just
want to
keep calling that
phone.
Back just to hear that.
To send Ron. Page, press 2 now.
Let me leave him a message here.
At the tone, please record your voice message. When you are finished recording, you may hang up or press pound for more options.
This is Dave.
This message is for Ronnie. Ronnie, this is Dave Duenas with Leaving the Ring and with my co-host Gabriel Montoya. We have a scheduled interview for 6:15 here. If you can answer your phone, I know it's a block or private number that we're calling you from, but let's try to get you on here, brother, because we have our next scheduled interview with Adner Morris. Okay, Ronnie. I like that, man. We'll try him again right now. Give him a minute or so. So you can hear the, he's probably going to check his voicemail and then realize that it's us. and I'll also text Frank Espinoza Jr. and let him know that we were calling him, but he's not answering. Let me tell him right now. Fight fans, if you want to call in and speak to us about some fights that are coming this weekend or in the future, you definitely can. You can speak to myself, Dave Duenison. Gable Montoya. I can see there's a few other callers that are patching in. So, Mr. Dave Chen, if you can just find out who's on the line waiting and who wants to talk boxing here with us. Number is going to be 347-215-7598. Big old shout out to the Bloodhound Boxing Gym that allowed me to go down there this past, just yesterday, to go check out Guy Robb. I mean, this kid's a beast. This kid's a beast, you know. And I know that that fight with Boxing 360's young champ, young beast himself, Joel Diaz Jr., was a candidate of fight of the year. It was a back and forth war. I was there covering it, in press row. For a minute, you would think that could this had a put a stomp in his career? Could this make him be doubtful about himself? Could this put him in a depression? Could this be a major setback for the young guy, Rob, out of Sacramento, California? And I got to tell you, what I saw out of him yesterday, no. This kid's confidence, man, is what you call a warrior. You know, Amirio Reyes was with us. He's got a warrior mentality. Okay, he said to call him now. And he's got a warrior mentality. And he's a kid that's you know, he was like straight up with me. He's like, look, man, I thought I won that fight, and I thought the ref stopped it, but I want to fight him again. I want to fight him again, you know, and I screwed up. He talked about his mistakes. He talked about what he did wrong. He talked about a lot of things, you know, and got to tell you, man, can't wait to get him on here on Leaving the Ring. Can't wait to get his trainer, Ray Woods, with us here on Leaving the Ring. We could talk even about the late Dave Corrales. A lot of stuff there. Hello, can we speak to Ronnie Rios? That was Gabriel saying, Ronnie.
Hello.
Yeah, can we please speak to Ronnie Rios?
Who?
Ronnie?
Ronnie Rios, you gotta remember.
Oh, I got the... Oh, my bad. Huh, wait a minute. Oh, I must have typed in the wrong number. My bad. That was the right number. I just typed it in this time.
Yeah, this is hilarious. So this Ronnie. Isn't Ronnie.
No, this is not right. All right, let's get.
I got the giggles, Dad. We got to get this out.
Oh my God! All right, let's get Ronnie Rios here with us. That was Alan Sanchez's camp. I just called by accident.
That's funny.
So let's get Ronnie Rios with us. This time we got it right. And then we got Adner Morris scheduled for 6:45 to talk to us here on Leaving Ring. Hopefully we can get Mariso Herrera. He's going to be fighting Mike Alvarado from Texas. And I heard that Mike got a busted lip.
Hello.
Yeah, can I please speak to Ronnie?
Hello?
Yeah, is this Ronnie Rios?
Yes, sir, this is him.
Hey, Ronnie, this is Dave Duenas with my co-host Gabriel Montoya from Max Boxing and Leaving the Ring Radio. Hey, man, welcome to the show.
Oh, man, thank you. I appreciate it. Sorry I missed that call, man. I just I wasn't familiar with the number, and I thought it was one of those callers from different states.
Hey, don't worry about it, man. I don't pay my bills either and stuff, you know, so I never ask.
Yeah, that's the main reason.
Hey, no problem. Hey, well, you know, congratulations on your past fight. You went 8 rounds. I mean, how did you feel about it? How did you feel about your performance? And what do you think is next?
First of all, thank you. I really appreciate it. And I felt real good. I just felt, in all honesty, that the referee kind of threw me off my game plan a little bit because he kept warning me for low blows that, for some reason, I have no clue why. If in my head, it didn't happen. So it kind of threw me off a little bit, and he also kept telling me that I was holding, which I wasn't. But I felt overall, I felt like I did a good job because, I mean, everyone was telling me that this guy was as tough as it came, that he was going to, he was a spoiler, he wasn't a journeyman, that he was tough, and I feel like we handled the situation very well.
Absolutely. You know, and it was a shutout in your end. You know, let me ask you, though, you know, with the ref and everything, when you're up against something like that and the ref is warning you, was it something that your corner had to get you back on track? Because obviously a little distraction could be a major distraction for a fighter, right?
Yes.
So what was the pep talk in your corner going back? Did you tell the trainer, like, you know, your coach, look, man, this guy's on me, you know, what do I do? And did he have to kind of just set you back in place and say, look, just focus, don't worry about it?
That's exactly what he said. Wow. those are the same words he said. He said, don't worry about it, just keep doing what you're doing. It wasn't up until the sixth or seventh round when the referee came over to the corner. And he told us, hey, look, if you keep doing it, I'm going to penalize you. So that's when he told me, hey, okay. He said, okay, look, Ryan, just keep doing what you're doing, but try to aim for the chest plate instead of for the belly button. So he was pretty much just trying to keep my composure, trying to keep me down and stick to the game plan.
Absolutely. I'm going to pass it over to my co-host, Mr. Gable Montoya.
Okay.
Congratulations on the win, Ronnie. Every time I see you, I get more and more impressed, man. You seem to be rolling out different aspects of your game. You know, sometimes you're just a boxer, sometimes you brawl, and then sometimes you mix up the two. Assess where you think you're at this point. Do you think you're a full-blown contender? Do you think you're a prospect on the cusp? Where do you feel you're at?
Where do I feel like I'm at? I feel like I wouldn't say I'm in the top 10 contenders because I feel like I still need a lot of grooming before I get there. But, I mean, the fans are going to speak for themselves. I have no authority to place myself because talk is cheap. It's all where the fans put you at. You know, if they place me as their favorite fighter, then that's an awesome and extraordinary feeling. But it's all to the fans. I can't comment on myself on where I'm at. But I'm very happy, though, where we're at so far.
Do you think, I know the Espinosas are just top people, you know, they're top managers in the sport. You were the great promoter. Do you feel, though, you know, that you need to fight more often or fight right on the schedule that you're at? I know in 2010 you fought a ton, but then 2011 you fought only three times, and now you've already fought twice this year. Do you know what the game plan is to move you and keep seasoning you? Do they want to step it up more than last year, or where are you guys at in terms of that plan?
Well, 2010 was a good year. 2012 was an exceptional. It was an okay year because I don't know if you guys are familiar with the story, but I had two setbacks, actually three. I had a cut, so I wasn't allowed to fight for 60 to 90 days, I believe, and I had an orbital fracture that kept me out for 5 months. And I also had a test, hepatitis, I think it was C positive.
Oh, wow.
The first time. Yeah, I was already going to fight, and I would have to say about 2 weeks beforehand, they told me, hey, you have to go do your blood work. So I was like, okay. So I went, and then they called me back, and they told me, hey, your hep C came back positive. So I went again, and they told me, hey, it came back positive. I was like, oh, what's wrong? So then they sent me to the specialist, where it's pretty much just, it just focuses on the hep C, whereas the test that you take at in San Pedro is just anything can set it off. You know, if you had a beer beforehand, then it sets it off as a hep C. But they sent me to a specialist, and it took, I believe it was 3 days for the testing to be complete. And then they told me, hey, look, you're good. You're 0.0. You have absolutely no trace of it. So I went back to San Pedro. I took various tests. Everything came back 0.0. So I guess it was two false positives, which was pretty scary at first. But then we got back into our game and we picked it up where we're at. And then we got cut right after that. So we had a lot of setbacks in 2011. And right now we've already fought twice and it's barely the fourth month. So hopefully we can squeeze in another two or three fights before the end of the year.
Yeah, you know, that's the one thing that first off the bat that you noticed out of your career you were consistent, and then it just kind of slowed down? And, you know, I don't think a lot of folks were aware of that and stuff. And but it looks like Espinosa are just keeping you busy again, and now a lot of folks, including myself, are excited, man, when we hear your name being you know, banded out there, that you're going to be back into the ring, you know. Last fight was 2 months ago. This, you know, this fight here, is it going to be every 2 months, 3 months? What are we looking at? And with this fight here with Guillermo Sanchez, did you walk away completely okay? Was there any energy injuries or anything that you have to need maybe to recoup from?
No, I walked away completely fine. From what they're telling us, you know how boxing is. It's never a for sure thing. They're saying June 23rd on the undercard for Ortiz. So we're going to get ready for that pretty soon. And then hopefully after that, I don't know, I might take a week or two break and then come back in either September or October. But as of right now, what they told me, June 23rd, yes.
Are you a management's dream? I mean, because, you know, when you get fighters that, you know, I've spoken to management teams and matchmakers, and I've spoken to fighters, and some fighters are right away going into their second, third fight. They're already like saying, no, I don't want to fight this guy, and I don't want to do that, do this and do that. It looks to me that you're like, I'll welcome whoever. It doesn't really matter. I just want to be consistent. Is that why the relationship between you and Espinosa works so well?
Yeah, I think so. Espinosa takes good care of their fighters. You know, they I don't think they want to throw you in right away into the deep, but they take their time. You know, they wait for you. They're patient enough for you to fill out. You know, when I signed with them, I believe I was 19. So they've been really patient with me. They've been really great. I would recommend any fighter to try to go with the Espinosa, because let's face it, you know, there's also a lot of management teams out there, but they're exceptionally good and
really good.
Yeah, they're really good. Huh?
Yeah.
Come on,
they're really good.
He was manager of the year really, once, so.
They're hilarious and they're sharp dressers. On top of that, especially Frank Senior, that guy cracks me up. It's just their keen eye. You know, they don't bullshit. Like, and you know, you'll ask them about a fighter and they'll tell you, you know, not always on the record, but they'll give you the straight thing. They're not going to sit there and say, well, I think this guy is this. You know, that he's better than he really is. And in that vein, you know, I'm curious, you know, if somebody asked me to describe you, I would describe you more as a boxer who is willing to brawl if it comes to that. How would you describe yourself?
I would probably describe myself as a boxer. I mean, I don't shy away from a fight. If someone's going to come at me and I have no choice but to fight, I'm going to fight. I'm going to go out on my shield if I can, but yeah, you know, it's no quit, you know, never surrender for me. And we're always trying to break our opponents. I'm the type of person who just keeps coming forward. I like to put on a lot of pressure. I like to work the body and head, try to be smart. And recently we've been trying to get hit as best as possible. I mean, we've been sparring against top people right now, so that actually brings a lot of experience, and it really opens your eyes and it teaches you so much. Especially when you're sparring with world champions.
I was there for your fight at the Orange County Fairgrounds with Roger Gonzalez. And you seemed to have a little bit of trouble in that fight. You won clearly, but you couldn't quite keep him on the outside where you wanted him to, and it became a little more of a brawl. What do you think has been the thing that you've had to learn the most in the last few fights as you've kind of stepped up in competition and stepped up in rounds?
Well, in that fight against the Roger, that's where I suffered the orbital eye fracture.
Okay.
I suffered it in the fourth round, so from the fourth on, I couldn't see. I was seeing triple vision, so I kind of had to fight kind of blind in that fight, and I couldn't really fight from the distance because I couldn't see him too well. So I kind of had to close the gap between both of us, and I had to take a little bit more shots than I'd like to.
You know, every fighter wants to be a big, big puncher. You got 18 wins, 8 KOs. And even with guys that have that record, they're still trying to find themselves. To me, when I watch you, it looks like, to me, you know yourself. You're like, you're comfortable. Are you comfortable with yourself right now? And At what point did it take you to get there, to be comfortable and understand that, you know, you have to have a different sides of yourself when you enter the ring?
I'm comfortable with myself, yes. And I think, like, goes back to what I was saying, sparring with the best brings out, you know, brings out confidence in yourself, which makes you confident in yourself and you're comfortable with yourself. We sparred against Mikey Garcia, Ponce de Leon, Orlando Solito. We were sparring against a heavier guy in Darby Perez. So all these guys bring different skills and different techniques. So it kind of just opens your eyes, and you're going to be able to see, like, oh, this punch works on this one, this works on this one. And you're kind of just seeing it. Not only that, when you got a fighter who's just putting constant pressure on you, a lot of fighters tend to panic, so, you know, and then there's those few fighters that just roll with the punches. Okay, you know, eventually he'll tire himself, or eventually I'll get to him. So that's what I'm trying to go along more as, like, sort of like Mayweather. He's just patient, looking at his opportunity, looking at what's open, what's not, what's going to work, what's not, and that's where we're trying to replicate right there.
You know, we applaud your management team, but obviously your coaching team is what you have to, you know, really look into the contributing of your style and who you are as a fighter. Fill us in a little bit about the relationship and how much do they contribute and how do they ground you as a fighter?
Well, I'll start off with the head coach, first of all. Ex Lopez, he's more like a father figure to me, you know. It's like it goes deep. Our relationship is deeper than just fighter trainer. And that helps me keeps me grounded, because I don't know if you guys are aware of it, but my father wasn't around as much as we wanted him to be.
Right.
So I kind of grew up with my mom, and Hector sort of filled in that void. And he just told me, hey, you know, if you want to be successful, you got to do this, you got to do that. Not just inside the ring, outside. And that brings in a lot of confidence inside, because, you know, you're stress-free outside your ring life. And second is Ron Ellison. He's a cut man. He also brings a lot to the table. He brings a lot of knowledge. He keeps me very comfortable. And not only that, he's also a nutritionist too. So he helps me make the weight a lot easier. And then you got the second, who sometimes we switch it up to Raul or Manuel, which they're tremendous. You know, I can't complain about either of them. And as a team, we just progress. You know, we don't just see each other inside the ring or inside the gym. We actually see each other outside as well. We hang out with each other's families and each other's girlfriend, et cetera, et cetera. And that sort of builds up a relationship. As you see, most fighters just leave coach after coach. And in my opinion, I don't think that's the correct move. You know, you've got to be loyal to the person who started you off, and Hector started me off. And if it wasn't for him, I wouldn't be in this position, you know?
Absolutely. You know, and it's funny, I've talked to numerous trainers and, you know, that start off their fighters. And, you know, a lot of them say that they know that sometimes they have to let go if they don't see that they can feed them anymore. But obviously, with you and your relationship with your trainer, it looks like you guys are just getting better and better. And it's always great to see a team come up together, you know, and, you know, struggle together and figure things out together. Let's talk about your sparring, man. What gets you to that point? What gets you to be ready when you get in the ring for fight night? Seen already with the Espinozas, these guys have a long history of just producing great fighters, working with great fighters, knowing how to move them, how to manage them, and how to match them correctly. But at the same time, as a lot of us always wonder, you know, do they match up their fighters, the Espinoza, you know, camp, all the fighters? Do you guys get to have a chance to fill each other out? Or do they just bring other fighters from other gyms and other camps to mix it up with you so you can see different styles?
Well, actually, if, the person that's in charge of my sparring is Hector. Mm-hmm. And, yes, we do spar against Espinoza Boxing. We spar against Abraham Lopez, Ponce de Leon. He's another Espinoza fighter. We've never sparred with Abner, but we also spar with other top fighters in Southern California. Sometimes we will even drive to Vegas to spar with Diego Maldonado.
I wonder how that one looks. How's that go?
Oh, but that was a long time ago. This was in the amateurs.
Okay.
Yeah, this is way back. He's a good guy, you know. I have so much respect for that guy. He's a down-to-earth guy, nice guy. And then we actually flew in once to Ohio to get some sparring out there too. So we go wherever we have to go to get sparring.
You can talk about Ponce de Leon. Tell us, man, how awkward is that guy getting in the ring? Because, you know, when you look at him, he looks, you know, the fight fans and even us, we're not really sure how good of a fighter he is until you get in. And obviously, when you get in, you find out how good of a fighter he is. Tell us a little bit about that sparring session with him.
Yeah, well, like you said, he's awkward. He's extremely awkward. When I first saw him, I was like, oh, he's sparring Ponce. So I kind of saw a tape of him.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, oh, you know, he's awkward, so I'm going to focus on this. But once you're in there, it's a whole different story. You try to do what you were set out to do, and his punches come from all types of different angles. So it kind of throws you off your game plan. Not only that, he hits freaking hard, too. Yeah, so.
Yeah, I mean his punching just looks so deceiving, you know? And I wouldn't want to get in with the guy. He looks like he's going to knock out a horse, man.
Yeah, he hits hard. I'm telling you, he's pop.
Who's the next guy, man, that you're hoping to get in with? I mean, because obviously, you know, you're keeping yourself busy. You're a super featherweight, but there's got to be something out there that you're kind of hoping that maybe you can kind of get in there and mess with, and get your breakthrough finally.
Well, we're actually going to get down to the 126-pound limit for this next fight.
Okay.
So we don't know who's out there or, you know, what to expect, but we're just going to see what they present to us, and we're going to get ready for whoever they offer us. And we're going to try to give the fans a good fight. That's our main priority, and to come out victorious as well.
Yeah, I don't think you've disappointed in that department, man. I don't think any fight fan could say that they don't have fun watching you fight, you know?
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. You know, it actually means a lot when someone comes up to me and tells me, man, your fights are entertaining, because who wants to be a boring fighter?
Exactly, you know? And, no, I don't think that even goes under your category of boring, man. But go ahead, Gabriel.
I'm curious, too, because you've grown up in these gyms down here, and there's just a million fighters. There's fighters people will never get to see. There's all these top level guys you get to work with. But who are the guys that you've modeled yourself after, or the guys that you looked up to? Who are your heroes as in terms of boxers?
As in boxers, I would have to go to the old school. Like for me, a boxing figure has to be somebody inside and outside the ring. You know, they got to take care of business inside and outside. Not only that, they have to be good people. For example, Alexis Arguello, he was a very humble guy. He hardly, besides the one thing that I heard negative about him, he was a down-to-earth guy. He was a nice guy. He had really good technique. I love the way he used to fight. Another person that I really used to look up to was Carlos Monzon, too. You know, he had a nice technique. Yeah, nice technique, down-to-earth guy. And, you know, who I'm also going to have to say who I kind of, just because he's such a humble guy, with Ricky Hatton. Yeah, Ricky Hatton, I would have to say. I like reading articles about him on how nice he was and how he still lived in the same area where he grew up in. And I think that means a lot to a fighter, you know, not getting a big hit or anything. That's like, that's just like so, that's an accomplishment itself, being able to be yourself and still hang out with the same people you did and not, you know, not think highly of yourself. I think that is an important quality that someone has to keep.
Absolutely. Well,
I think also to understand who you are as a fighter, you know, to not think, like some guys think, you know, because of their record, their first 10 guys they knock out, which are the first 10s are kind of a gimme almost. They're giving you confidence and getting you used to the pro game. You think a big part of this game is knowing your limitations, knowing how far you can go, and just being real with yourself, knowing like, okay, I'm not a puncher, or, you know, that's what I am, is a puncher. You think that's important?
Yeah, that's important, because if you're not a excuse me, I'm sorry to cut you off.
Oh, and also, do you think you have a clear picture of yourself at this point?
Yeah, because, I mean, if you're not a puncher, and in your mind you think you're a puncher, and you go out there and you try to knock someone out, but you don't have any pop to hurt them, you're going to get yourself knocked out.
Right.
Or the same thing if you think you're fast and you're not fast and you put your hands down like Mayweather, you're gonna get cracked. So I think that is an important to know your limitations and what you can do. You know, if you're okay speed, then I think you should keep your hands up. So I think that's an important key, to know your limitations in speed, power, and endurance. If you didn't train hard enough, why are you going to go out the first two rounds and try to finish them off, knowing that you can only go four rounds, you know?
Yep, I agree.
Fight accordingly. Yeah.
Well, there's three things that we can say about Ronnie Rios. The first one, down to earth. The second one, exciting fighter. And the third one, the kid's got some smarts here, man. I think you got the goods.
Thank you. I appreciate it. It means a lot to me, you know.
Well, Ronnie, man, I appreciate you coming on Leaving the Ring and speaking to myself, Dave Duenas, and Mr. Gable Montoya, a.k.a. Mr. Dark Cloud. And we wish you all the luck. Can't wait to hear your announcement if you get back into the ring really soon. And just continue to do what you're doing, man. And just know that the fight fans out there appreciate your fighting style, and they definitely appreciate you coming on and speaking to us and being truthful.
Thank you so much, you guys. It was a pleasure. And hopefully I'll speak to you guys soon.
Hey, don't change the your voicemail, man. We were having a ball with it. The whole Ronnie.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
All right, brother. You take care, man.
You guys take care. Bye.
There you go. Bye, Espinoza Boxing, Ronnie Rios. Ronnie! Here with us on Leaving the Ring. I like this kid. I like his answers. I like what he had to say, and I also like his fighting style. If you haven't had a chance to watch him, you can definitely research him. Get him on Google, on YouTube. Look him up on YouTube, and you can see some of his fights. And if not, Espinoza Boxing, follow Espinoza Boxing. I'm pretty sure he can retweet you some of his fights. You see Ronnie Rios and the whole camp that come on, all the fighters, the stable that comes out of Espinoza Boxing. We're going to be rolling through, man. We got to get now Adner Morris here with us on Leave It in the Ring.
Speaking of Espinoza fighters. And yeah, Ronnie doesn't do the Twitter thing. I think, like you're saying, smart guy. You know, he just stays off the Twitter, stays out of the argument.
Well, you know what?
That does his thing, you know?
We do have fighters that are on there, and you know, they just understand that it's a social network, and they'll tweet when they can. And it's, you know, I like the guys that do tweet, the fighters that do tweet, but they're kind of short. Like Adner Morris. I like Adner Morris when he tweets. You know, myself.
Yeah, he keeps it just real succinct. You know, this is my deal, and I'm out. You know?
And he's done.
Hello?
Yeah, can we speak to Adner Morris?
This is Adner Morris. How you doing?
What's up, brother? How you doing? This is Dave Duenas with Gabriel Montoya on Leaving the Ring.
How was going, Brian? Good, good. Been expecting your call.
All right, man. We had Ronnie Rios on just for the short bit, and now we got you on. Really excited having you on. You're going to get Eric Morel. Hey, let's talk a little bit about that fight. I mean, you're not slowing down, dude, at all. I mean, you're taking everything that's out there possible. I mean, if you have not gotten the respect of fighters, I mean, of fans, I don't know what's wrong with the fans. I don't know what they want from you.
Right. I mean, yeah. I mean, every fight, every opponent that they put in front of us, we definitely don't say no. You know, Golden Boy, they gave us that name and we said, let's do it. You know, we want to make this fight happen, and tough fight. You know, good fight for the fans, Puerto Rico against Mexico, and you know, I hope the fans go home happy. You know, April 21st.
You know, now. Eric is a guy that was very high on, you know, we're talking a few years back. We have a lot of folks who were very high on him. Kind of fell off, went to prison. Now is back in the scene. Hasn't really made a stamp back on the boxing game, you know, but he's gradually. But how dangerous of a guy do you think that he is? How dangerous for you?
He is very dangerous just because for the fact that everything you mentioned. I mean, he's out of prison. He's hungry for success, for boxing. He wants to come up on a 11-run streak, you know, no losses. And that makes him really dangerous because he wants it really bad. But, you know, he thinks that I'm taking this fight lightly, and that's where his mistake is, you know. I'm not. I train this hard, and it's not harder than I did in my last four fights, and I'm ready for him. I'm ready to showcase another great fight, show people a different Adner Morris as I always want to every fight. And, you know, it's going to be a great fight for the fans.
you know, from the beginning of watching your career, I think a lot of us feel that we've kind of grown up with you, watching you, watching the changes in your skills and your personality and the way you've kind of grown into who you are now. And I got to tell you, going back to back, man, I mean, just fight after fight from D'Artagnan out of Beckel twice and now going with Morel. The most important, I think the only disappointment, I think you were disappointed, was that a lot of us, including myself, wanted to see the Dornier. Is fighting Eric from Puerto Rico, is that an appetizer for yourself?
Not at all. I'm not looking at this fight that way. I'm not looking at this fight as a tune-up fight. There is no such thing as tune-up fights, I think. You know, to my belief, he's just another opponent, you know. A guy who has two hands, a great boxer, great experience. Another, you know, day at work, you know, it's going to be a tough fight. But if you put an appetizer as in, you know, not the big fight that I won, definitely. It's not. I want, like you mentioned, Onito Donaire. That's the fight I want, the fight that not only I, you know, I think I speak for the fans. That's the fight that they want to watch and definitely that I want to give, you know, without a doubt, you know, for the fans. And hopefully we make it happen. Let's work with the promoters. Hopefully they can make this fight happen. God willing, everything goes well. This April 21st. Let's make it happen before the end of this year.
Abdur, this is Gabe Montoya with Max Boxing and Leave It in the Ring. Welcome to the show, first off. Long time no talk. I'm curious, you've had these big fights back to back to back. Do you worry about an emotional letdown fighting a guy that may not be, you know, he's not a glamour fighter, it's not necessarily a stay busy, he's dangerous, but do you worry that, you know, that he's not an Beckel, he's not one of those big names, that you could have one of those slip-ups?
You know, I try not to worry about that, being out of no attention to that. I know a lot of people are just not looking at this fight, you know, taking this fight that serious because, again, you know, this guy's been under the radar for so long. He's trying to make a comeback, but, you know, that does not make him any less, you know, better or worse opponent. He is a good opponent. He's just not, you know, one of those big names, like you said. And, again, it's a big, good fight for me, a fight that I train hard for, a good fight that I want to showcase. And hopefully, you know, God willing, what motivates me right now, really, for that fight is winning that world title. We got to let it be known that it's for the WBC Super Bantamweight Championship. So I'm looking forward to winning that, God willing, and, you know, making a name for myself in that weight division.
Talk about the guy. You know, what do you do? You break him down on tape. What have you seen of him? What do you know of him? What are your thoughts on how the fight might go?
You know what? On paper, obviously he's more experienced than me. He has over 40 fights. He's been around. He's been champion twice. Definitely, this is not anything new for him. But style-wise, I think he's a boxer puncher. You know, he's a boxer that likes to fight from the outside. Every mistake, he likes to make you pay for every mistake he makes. He likes to box from the outside, and he's not a fighter that will risk much. He will not risk much. He's not a fighter that's gonna stand toe-to-toe. But obviously, keeping in mind that he might, you know, because he wants it that bad. You know, he wants to fight that bad. So we're ready. We're ready for an inside fight, toe-to-toe, and we are ready to figure this opponent out if it comes down to, you know, taking him down the ring.
Now, there was some backlash, you know, before the rematch with Beckel. You know, people like, oh, Abner Morris is a low-blow artist and dirty fighter, and, you know, we went through the whole argument. Do you think things have now changed since you won so clearly and so cleanly? In that second fight, have you noticed people are a little cooler to you? And are you holding a grudge on some of those people that just turn so easily on you?
Yeah, I think it's changed. No doubt it has. I mean, the people that might still be talking are just, you know, people that have nothing to do or just for the fun of it or, you know, just too.
They're negative anyways.
Yeah, to be negative, you know, they'll start throwing that out. But, you know, I think I proved that, you know, I beat the guy friends square without, you know, no controversy. Just how boxing guy and fought a great fight, you know, in the last fight against the back one. But definitely has no effect on me. It doesn't bother me. Really strong-minded and looking forward to this fight and any upcoming fight.
How much longer do you think you stick around at bantamweight? You know, no, this is super bantamweight, but you know, every time I see you, it looks like you're just getting bigger and bigger. I mean, are you able to maintain that weight? Are you looking to move up to be a featherweight or anything like that?
You know what? I definitely do. I want to move up on weight, not just super bantamweight. I want to move to featherweight, super featherweight. My like you said, my body is growing. You know, we are kind of not struggling, but, you know, not so comfortable either making 122. We feel great, obviously, because, you know, we got those extra pounds. But, again, right. You know, it's not something that we're making easy. You know, I feel good. I'll feel strong at this weight class, and hopefully we stick around at least, you know, to give the fans, you know, at least 2-3 great fights against top, you know, top fighters in this weight class.
Yeah, I mean, because, you know, 26 years old, in boxing years, you know, they always say when you hit 28 or 30, that's considered like going out of your peak. Do you feel like you got to kind of like maybe rush it a little bit more to gather all those fights, and that's why you've been taking on back-to-back hard fights? I mean, from Yanni Perez, I mean, you just kept going. And like I said, it doesn't look like you're going to slow down anytime soon. But at 26, do you feel like you needed to cram everything in all at once?
You know what, it's funny because I have been thinking that, and not that, not in the sense that I'll probably be done, I'll be washed out. No, just the fact that I want to retire young. I definitely don't want to see myself after 30 still fighting. I want to retire young, you know, being, you know, I have faced the top fighters out there going out with definitely, you know, great record, great game for myself, people knowing me as, you know, I'm the one that fought everybody, every top of position, and, you know, obviously, you know, cashing out, you know, going home financially good and just retiring young.
You know, if you don't get no Nito Dornier, there's another Mexican fighter out there, a great Mexicano fighter out there by the name of Orlando Salido, who had his two rematches, successful fights with Juanma Lopez. Is that a guy that you would be interested in?
Oh, yeah, no doubt. I mean, any fighter that's going to make a great fight for the fans, I'm with it, man. Believe me, I'm with it. I'm ready. That's a tough fight. You know, that's a really tough fighter, strong fighter. You know, my respects. The great fight that, you know, both of the fighters gave us, you know, gave us that month ago. As a fan, you know, I enjoyed that fight. And definitely, that's a fight, you know, even in featherweight, you know, I'll be more than willing to move up and give that fight because I know we could, you know, we can make it into a great fight, you know. At the end of the day, I'm more than sure that the fans are going to go home satisfied. And that's what, you know, makes me happy and more than willing to be happy to make this fight.
Yeah, because, you know, when I look at the bantamweight division and I go, okay, I think you pretty much have kind of cleaned it up.
Well,
I mean,
there's
you know
one
what I mean?
Guy.
Like, oh, yeah, there is one guy.
Anselmo Moreno. What do you think about him? That's a tough style. He's a pure boxer.
Right.
Doesn't bring a lot to the table in terms of being a draw. So, you know, I know this is more, I don't like to get into, would you fight this guy? I know a fighter is going to say yes to that question every time. But do you feel like if you left bantamweight and you didn't fight him, would you feel like you hadn't quite cleaned it out and there was some unfinished business there?
You know what? No doubt. I mean, if I would not fight him, people will, you know, forever be talking, oh, he never faced this guy. As any other
yeah.
fighter that has retired, you know, I think they,
yeah.
they get mentioned, you know, like, oh, but he never fought this guy. So I think definitely that's one of the names. But I think you answered pretty much everything. I mean, the guy, he's without a doubt a superb fighter, a great fighter. He moves around great in the ring, but he doesn't attract much, you know, because he doesn't
risk.
He's not there to honestly, you know, satisfy the crowd. He's just in it to win, obviously, as any fighter. But you know,
yeah.
if he has to run the whole 12 rounds, he'll do it just to get a win. and he will not please the crowd. And I think I'm the other way around. If I'm running and making a boring fight, I would somehow, like, you know, just go in and give the crowd a good fight because they pay, you know, they pay for their tickets to get, see a good fight, and that's the way it should be.
Yeah, you know, I was there ringside for that fight and with Darchinian, and obviously you were probably focused in on your fight later on that evening. But, man, you know, I like skilled boxers. I think you're a skilled boxer, but you risk. You know, there was people that were just going crazy, like, wow, this guy's amazing. I was bored to tears. I got to be perfectly honest with you. I wasn't that, you know, and I'd seen him before, and I do enjoy his work, but I certainly didn't enjoy his work that night. I was bored to tears. And I wouldn't be that critical of you if you didn't fight it. It's kind of based on that. It might not be that exciting of a fight. But
yeah.
You know, and we didn't agree on that, remember? Because I actually was entertained by his fight. And to tell you the truth, I'd love to see Abner and him go at it. You know, I think that what I've seen of you, Abner, is that you've came in with game plans, and this is a style that I'd like to see if you could figure out. If he decides to run,
It will definitely be interesting. It will be interesting to face this guy because of his style, like you mentioned, and figuring out the guy will make it even more fun, you know? Figuring out the guy inside the ring, like, okay, this guy's doing this, let's do that, you know? And definitely will be a good fight, but again, you know, as a fighter, you know, I wouldn't mind fighting him. But is that a fight that some fans want to watch? If it is, you know, let's make it happen. I know it'll be a lot easier to make because Golden Boy has them. But, you know, at the end of the day, I do whatever they tell me to, and you know, whatever they give me, you know.
I like to see it, and I think a lot of fight fans would. If not, I don't think a lot.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think we'll hold you to it, because if you were to move to junior featherweight, there's plenty of names out there that are very intriguing. One of them is Guillermo Rigaton. That Rigaton's that
Rigondia.
Rigondia. I'm sorry, I don't want to say Rigaton. Rigondia. That is that blew out Rico Ramos, and I'd like to see that. You know what I mean? I mean, Dornier said he didn't want nothing to do with them, said the name wasn't big enough for him. But I think in order for you to get Dornier, you got to shut him out by taking all the fights that are available to corner him. What do you think?
I think that's another good fight. I mean, don't believe me. I'm like, you know, like you said, I'm a fighter. And if you mention, if you continue going, you know, down in eight, I'm going to say yes to all of them because, again, that's what I do. I like to please the crowd, you know, I'll fight anyone. But in reality, it comes down to, like, you know, okay, what's best for me now, you know? This fight, you know, if you put all those guys together, which fight would I prefer? No doubt, Nonito, you know? And not because, you know, the other guys really don't bring much, but they do. But I think Nonito does more, you know, for me.
Do you think that let me ask you this real quick. Do you think Nonito thinks that you bring anything to the table?
I really wouldn't be able to answer that. I think so. I think people are pretty much cornering him, you know. Not much pressuring him to face me, but my name is being brought a lot, you know, to him. Like, what would you think of Abner? And I think he's coming to a point where, oh, you know, this will be a great fight. So I think so. I mean, at the end of the day, you know, it's a good fight, you know, Mexico against Puerto Rico. I thank God I managed to get a good following, you know, in my Mexican crowd, and hopefully it continues that way, and it grows.
If Nonito was to say no, because there's just not enough there, would that surprise you?
It wouldn't. I don't know why, if he would say that, you know, I mean, it wouldn't bother me. But again, you know, I'm doing my job. I got to win my fight. And at the end of the day, I think, you know, the ones that come down to making that type of big fight are the managers and the promoters, obviously. So I think I have a great promoter, you know, Golden Boy Promotions with Frank Espinosa. And I think we can manage to make that fight happen. Without looking past Eric Morel, we definitely have a tough, you know, fighter in a week, and we plan on giving a great show and letting people know why I deserve, you know, to fight these kind of fighters that we're all mentioning right now.
It's going to be in Texas. Any concerns about being in Texas especially what we've been seeing after fight that's been happening out there in Texas?
You know what? Yeah, it's been brought to my attention after watching those fights, you know, especially the Kyrgyz fight against Molina, what went down, you know, and it's crazy. It's amazing. And hopefully not. I mean, definitely not going inside the ring thinking that. I'm just going to go in there and do my job, and hopefully the judges and the referee does their job as well.
I'm actually told by some inside sources you're already down 20 rounds going into the fight. So
wow.
Be careful heading out there in Texas. It's a little scary.
Yeah.
Well,
can you even
after...
worry about that stuff? I mean, you just go in and say, you know what? Like, I'm just going to do my job. Like, the only thing I can control is the kind of shape I'm in, how I approach the fight, how I handle everything that Morel brings to the table. And that's really all you can do, right?
Yeah, that's pretty much all I can do. I train hard for every fight. Again, you know, this is another fight. A great fighter, Eric Morel, he's coming with everything. He wants to beat me. And believe me, I want to beat him too. I want to take him out of there and keep on moving forward, you know, with what I have accomplished in this past 2 years, you know, facing top oppositions and definitely don't plan on stopping.
Well, there you go. Abner Mars here on Leaving the Ring with us. Hey, brother, I appreciate you taking the time out of your day and the camp to speak to us here on Leaving the Ring. Wish you all the best of luck, and we're going to be tuning in with the rest of the fight fans on your fight.
Thank you so much. Thank you always for the support. Appreciate it. To all you guys and my fans, thank you guys for listening and for giving me the support. I won't let you guys down. Give you guys another great fight. Come April 21st. Take care and God bless. And que viva Mexico. Vincent with y'all.
There you go. Abner Mars, April 21st, Espinosa Boxing. Hey, Abner, thank you again.
Thank you, man. Have a good one.
I like all his answers. I've always liked Abner Mars. I think he's a warrior. And I like that he still wants to fight with Nonito Dornier. And I think that, I still want to see that fight happen. I know Nonito, you know, he's moved up. And I know he's looking at other fights out there. And a lot of folks, I wouldn't be mad at Nonito if he were able to kind of lock down Gamboa and get that fight. But...
Sure.
Rigondeaux. I don't know why I said Rigondeaux.
Well, you know, he moves really well in the ring. It's almost like watching him dance to Rigondeaux.
Yeah, Rigondeaux. There you go. You know, man. I swear to God, Geo Image, our photographer, he loves it when I screw up. And he'll throw it out there and make fun of me. He'll tweet me. He'll text me. He just gives me such a hard time. I'm gonna catch you, cabrón. Watch when you mess up.
That's funny.
Well, let's fight fans. If you want to call in, you definitely can. Here on Leaving the Ring, 347-215-7598. Call in, speak to us here on Leaving the Ring with myself, Dave Duenas, and Gable Montoya. Be sure to pick up your Undisputed Fight magazine. Should be out on the 15th, here on the 15th of this month. It's a great article. We got a lot of stuff on there talking about Miguel Cotto, Floyd Mayweather, Ishisei Smith, who's going to be fighting on the May 5th undercard under Mayweather Promotions. And got a lot of things in there. You know, we also talk about Brandon Rios and Gamboa. What happened? What went on there? You know, and I even see Isha tweeting out that Gamboa has been at the Mayweather gym, sparring, working out, getting his groove on.
Getting his rigatone on?
Getting his rigatone on.
Well, it's weird. I mean, it's like he's right there. I mean, everybody knows where he is. It's just, what's up, dude? Like, why did you not want to take that fight? You know, like, nobody's really calling him on it. You know, nobody's really nailed him down for the interview. And I don't know. Maybe we try to get him on here, see what's happening. I mean, on some level, I can – there's a guest that I'm going to try to pull on at some point, Bryn Jonathan Butler, who did the – who's doing at this moment the Guillermo Rigondeaux documentary. And he, like I said before, he knows a lot about the whole Cuban culture and how to you know, how it all works, and it'd be interesting to see his take on Gamboa and how that all works. You know, what he thinks is going on.
Yeah, I think that'd be really really interesting to get him on and speak to him here. Really quick, I'm gonna try to text to see Mauricio Herrera is out of his training camp. I know that he's training right now, getting ready for Mike Alvarado with his fight and on a pay-per-view card. And DeGable's telling me he just got the boot from – he just got dropped, so he'll be calling in right now. Back onto the show. But, Fight Fans, if you want to call in, you definitely can. 347-215-7598. We got Mr. Montoya back with us. The cloud is back. The cloud is back.
It's overcast once again. I have returned.
You have returned. If you want to do our fight schedule
– let me pull that up.
Let's do our fight schedule really quick before we patch in some fight fans. And, we definitely got to give up our predictions and see if see what the fight fans got to say about it.
It's been a packed show, man. We haven't had a breath between all
the
guests. I think we're done with the guests, right? I think that's it for the night.
Well, we might have two more. I'm going to check right
now.
I know. You know what's funny is that a lot of folks really don't get, man, that – like, after we do 3 hours of boxing talk, and immediately after when I get off here, I got a headache, and I'm tired, and my jaw hurts, you know, and I'm starving. And I got literally people calling me after. I know this happens to you, too. People are literally calling after, and they want to talk, you know, and I'm like, man, I just did 3 hours. I'm beat, you know. Hit me up tomorrow. Hit me up mañana, you know. But.
That's pretty funny. Linus from our Twitter account, at LinusQ, said, I heard if it's worth his while, it's on, but Moreno has as much appeal as The English Patient, which, if you've ever seen that movie, is not much at all.
No.
It's kind of boring.
Kind of boring. Come on. I think The English Patient was – go ahead.
Yeah, I didn't make it through that one. And I like boring movies, but Moreno, I like him, but, you know, I liked him before, and then I – Tom and the Jarchinian fight, and I was just like, good Lord, this is just not fun to watch. And what I like is there's a difference. You know, when you watch those old fights, even like the 70s and the 80s, you know, Sugar Ray Leonard, guys like that, that were would now, you know, Steve Kim would put quotations around him and call him a skill guy. He got in there and got dirty. He was willing to let his hands go. I mean, his big moment for me is the Hearns fight, and he was getting outboxed. The skill guy was getting outskilled. And he decided to become the beast.
Right.
And he went to war, and he knocked dude out in the 14th round. Not a lot of guys risk. And that's what I love about Ronnie Rios or Nadia Morris. Those are guys with their boxing skills, but they choose to go to war. I like that. You know, that's what a real fighter is to me, is somebody that's all around, that can box and brawl, knows the difference about when to do both those things, and is willing to do it when you have to. I mean –
Well, you know, too, it's also a gamble at the same time, because even knowing when to do it, box and brawl, it can always backfire. And that's what kind of makes the fights even more exciting, because you don't know whether or not it's not going to fall into play the way they were kind of trying to orchestrate it. You know, maybe the flute may go off. Maybe the violin string busts off. It might be a different tune. You might not hear or see the same tune that they dance to, and that's what I like about fighters like that are really kind of willing to kind of risk it and find the rhythm in the fight.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. I mean, you know, there's always that. You know, we were talking about sparring yesterday and the gym, and there is that thing of, you know, like identity, and when you're met with adversity, your personality comes out. When dude punches you in the face and he hits a lot harder than you realized, and maybe your knees buckle a little bit or your eyes water up, you really find out exactly who you are. Are you going to come forward and try to get past that and risk taking more damage in order to get your damage in? Or are you going to become a mover and you're going to kind of move around and box and kind of hunt and peck and score but not do any damage? That's, you know, I think the difference between a lot of fighters today. There's guys that just... You know, they're like, I don't want to get into a war. I want to be unscathed when I hit that 12th round. And I don't need to risk. You know, these people don't understand this is my life. And then there's those other guys, like a Michael Katsidis, who's like, you know what? I'm going to go in there and I'm going to give you your value for money. This is what I do for a living, and I'm just going to
devil may care. You know, let's just get this done. Let's do the business, as he calls it. So that's a great phrase. Those guys are always going to have my attention just a little bit more than the guys that don't risk anything at all, that always play it safe. Say, well, this is a business, and you don't understand. I got to feed my family. Like, I understand that. I respect that. That's cool. But don't get mad when I don't tune in or, you know, when I'm not really all that excited by what you're doing. Because, you know, to me, it's the hurt business. It's also entertainment. And
yeah.
You got to be, you know, if you want to get to that next level, I think there's only one exception to that rule in this business, and that's, you know, that's Floyd Mayweather. He's not exciting. He's fascinating, but that's different. You know, he's very skilled and fun to watch in that sense. But, you know, if I was trying to turn a bunch of people on that had never seen a fight before, that's not who I would show them. I always start out with Hagler Hearns, and then I kind of work my way from there if I want to introduce people to the fights, you know, or maybe Trinidad versus Compass, you know. But that's also because I like to turn people on to people. It's Trinidad because he's the man.
Absolutely.
But, you know, I mean, like, if you're going to show them the best, you know, sort of like, let me show you an action film. You're not going to bust out The English Patient. You're going to bust out Raiders of the Lost Ark, you know. You're going to show the best of that. And to me, like a Hagler Hearns or Castillo Corrales, you know, I have the fondest memories of watching that fight live, not at the arena, but, you know, on TV. And I literally replayed that fight 4 times that night. And I was throwing a fight party, and some people came for the fight, and some people came for the pool and the drinks afterwards, the pool table at my place at the time. And I threw a big party. And we had to keep replaying it. And each group sat enraptured watching this thing, dead silent.
Yep.
Didn't want to hear who won, just wanted to watch this fight. People that hadn't watched fights before but knew, you know, what they were in for coming to my house.
Isn't that
to me is what it's all about.
Isn't that just the greatest, too, to see somebody's face that's never really, really honestly sat or understood the violence of of our sport, but at the same time, the science, the sweetness, and you know, the beauty of it. And that's one of the fights there. I mean, I remember that fight so well. First off, let me tell you this. I knew that fight was going to be a great fight between Corrales and Castillo. I was telling everybody that would listen, you got to watch this fight. This is a fight. This is going to be a great fight. My TV burnt out. Okay? I had to go down in rush, man. Didn't even care, dude, if I didn't have a dollar to my name. But I was going to put it on credit. And I was going to have the creditors call my house. It didn't matter because I was going to get a TV to watch that fight. And it's right when I moved into the new neighborhood that I moved in Modesto. It's right when I moved to this dirt town, Modesto, California. And when that fight started and the blows started to fly, dude, I was a bullhorn. I was screaming and yelling that I guarantee you that the end of that fight, the neighbors knew that I was a fight fan. And he also knew that I cussed like a sailor. Because, man, that was just something else, you know. And then I brought, you know, friends over that didn't watch it and sat them down. And you know, they were trying to get me into UFC at the time. And I would say, look, man, until UFC can produce something like this, then I will jump the fence. But until now, I'm fine on this, on my grass, you know.
I'll tell you, I've only seen one UFC fight that's ever really done it for me like that. And that was, I can't remember, Forrest Griffin versus Stephen Bonner. It's probably the only fight, and it was very Castillo Corrales-like. There was no knockout, though. That was the thing. That was the caveat of that fight. It had everything. It had knockdowns. It was going one way, and then it had that reversal at the end where you didn't see that ending coming. It was like the surprise ending. All of a sudden, boom, and I remember watching it with friends, and the guy next to me had a ton of money on it, one of my good friends, a writer named Sky Dickinson. And we're watching the fight, and Corrales goes down, and Sky is like, well, you know, there went that money. But, you know, we were all, it was just me, Sky, and my brother Tom watching this thing. And we were like, oh, he went down, and then he went down again. You know, the first time it was like, get up, and then the second time it was like, oh, well, there went that money. And then the reversal happens, and Corrales comes back, and I think maybe when Trinidad beat De La Hoya, it was probably the only other time that I went that crazy, and maybe the Kirkland-Angulo fight was just going absolutely nuts because what you were seeing was just unreal. You couldn't believe it. I remember my brother who just came to town, Jerry, a big boxing fan, but he actually said, you know what, I recently watched that fight you showed me, Castillo Corrales won, and I just, every once in a while, like every year, I've got to roll that one out just to see it, because it's one of the most unbelievable things I've ever seen in sports. And I'll say this, like you're saying about UFC, no other sport can compete with boxing when we're at our best like that. It just don't. UFC fights, a guy gets knocked down, and the way Corrales did, they stop the fight. The fight would be over. There's no chance of that getting up, reversal, turning it all around. I don't think I've ever seen it. I don't watch a hell of a lot of UFC, but I watch enough to know that I've never seen anything quite like that. You know, maybe there was one recently, but this ain't a UFC show, so I'm not going to talk about it. But it's very rare that kind of reversal to happen. And you know, our sport is just, we're just at the top of our game when you get two guys that are perfectly matched like that. And that was great matchmaking and just heart that you'll rarely see.
Absolutely. Great. Great heart. More than heart. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
How do you describe it? You know, yeah. I know, you know, when that fight happened, writers trying to write about it. I mean, there was no words really honestly describe. Wow. What
yeah.
was really just kind of just transparent out of the TV to you? You know what I mean? Was
yeah,
reaching
like,
out to? It was just that great. It was that great.
I am not worthy. Yeah, you're just like, I'm not worthy.
Yeah. I think the only word that you could put down was like, damn.
Yeah.
Damn.
I mean, I remember the. I was actually supposed to be at that fight, and I decided not to travel. I remember it was at the Marquez Vasquez 3 at Home Depot. That one. Was another one like that where you were like, wow, like it was a privilege to be here tonight. Some nights it feels like work, like Darcini and Moreno. That felt like, boy, I'm sure at work right now, on New Year's Eve, no less. But then there's other fights where you're just like, you sit there and you don't try to beat deadline. I mean, you do because you have like an hour from the last bell to get that story in. At least that's our policy at our site. But you want to fill that hour with as much of what you just experienced as you can. And there's a responsibility to the history of what you just saw and to really try to find the best words that are most appropriate. I mean, those moments are humbling, man. And when you just kind of go, yeah, I may spar and take some punches to the face or hit the heavy bag now and again, but I'll never, ever be able to do what those guys do. Not even on my best day.
I know. Yeah.
You know?
No.
It's
no matter how tough of a guy you think you are, until you get in that ring and you do what these guys do. Like when Reyes came on, we talk about discipline and being focused. This guy, no matter what, is really able to set aside what's hard and deep in his heart right now. What's, you know, I couldn't even describe it. Losing somebody very close to me and still being able to go to work.
Unbelievable.
And say I'm going to perform. Don't worry about it. It's my job. And this is what my father would want me to do. Boxing takes a special person. You know, it just takes a special person to go out there. And when we talk about athletes, you know, and some folks will try to argue with me and they'll be like, well, boxers are not really, I mean, they're athletes, but they're not like, you know, Jerry Rice and this and that. I'm like, nah, man, nah. See, you don't watch our sport enough to understand that these guys were just not just athletes, but they're warriors. And it takes a warrior's mentality to do what they do.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why, you know, I'll go back to this because we still get a lot of email about the Jose Suleiman and even texts and Facebook direct messages and Twitter and stuff. That was the sole purpose of why I got upset with him. It was by him laughing about the fact that he would rob these fighters because I think that we're in debt to these fighters in so many ways. Hey, let's pass in some fight fans really quick, and let's talk boxing. Ooh. Here on Leaving the Ring. We've been having a lot of guys on hold. Let's go down the line. I know some folks have been on hold for more than 45 minutes. We'll get to you. I apologize. But let's get Josh, who wants to talk, Mauricio Herrera. What's up, brother? You're on live right now on Leaving the Ring.
Hey, what up, fellas? What's going on?
This Big
Tree. How you doing?
Yes, sir.
What up, Big Dog? How you doing, brother?
Man, chilling, man. Just listening to you guys' show, eating some ceviche right now.
ceviche. Oh, that sounds good, man. Check you out. Big Tree's our writer for Leaving in the Ring. He was out this past yesterday at Big Bear, freezing his ass off, checking out Shane Mosley to see whether or not he's not just throwing one punch every 30 seconds, to see how well he's going to do against Saul Canelo Alvarez. He also had a chance to watch the Cinnamon Kid. But he had a chance to interview Mauricio Herrera today, who's going to be facing Mike Alvarado. Hey, tell us a little bit about interview. How did he sound, and what do you think?
Man, he sounded confident. He sounded really confident, and he had a good story. Some stuff I didn't know about him. You know, he was just telling me how his just the way he got started in boxing, how he had a, you know, he didn't get started till late. And so it was pretty interesting. He was telling me how he used to just train himself for years. He didn't have a trainer for a while, and he would train himself for years watching watching other fights. He said he loved watching heavyweights because it was more slow motion so you could see their feet. But he would listen to the trainers and listen to what goes on in the corner. So, and basically taught himself everything like that for a while. I thought that was pretty interesting to hear that from him. But, man, he sounds very confident against Alvarado. I think he kind of feels it's going to be similar to Provokhnov, you know, where it's a guy who's going to just come straight forward, no defense at all, and he's going to be able to land those straight punches down the middle. And he just sounded like his game plan was just on point. And he said he's not afraid to get in a slugfest with him, but he said that if he knows people would think he's stupid for thinking that, but he says he didn't even feel the power of Provokhnov, and everyone thought that his block was going to get knocked off by him.
Right.
And he says,
yeah.
And he basically said if it goes the same way with Mike, he wouldn't be afraid to trade shots with him.
I like this fight a whole lot. I know a lot of folks are kind of counting out Mauricio with this fight. I mean, if anything, I think this guy is going to go, you know, a blaze of glory on his back if he does go out. Alvarado's a big puncher, but a guy that can absorb punishment. But Mauricio has kind of shown that, too. I think out of the whole card, this is by far one of the interesting fight out of that whole pay-per-view card. I think if I was going to buy it, that alone would be part of it. But I like Brandon Rios, you know, and you know that you're going to get something good out of Brandon Rios. It always comes up slow, but then it keeps banging away, and then you start seeing the change of the other fighter, and then you know you're just going to end up getting a stoppage. Hey, Josh, stay on hold really quick, because I think Gabriel has our next guest with us. Right, Gabe?
Yeah, I'm going to call him in right now. So you guys keep talking. I'll be
okay,
right back
cool.
in like 30 seconds.
So let me ask you, Josh, really quick. Who are you picking for Saturday night fight, man?
Well, I'm going to go with Rios. I'm going to go with Marquez. I think those two are the obvious ones. But, man, you know, maybe it's because I just, you know, talked to Herrera. I might have a little, I don't want to say biasness towards him, but just listening to him and talking to him, I can see him pulling off the upset. He's been counted out several times in all his fights pretty much against Mike Dallas Jr. as well. And he just seems like he's ready to show everyone on pay-per-view. I think that's what sounded like he was most excited about, is that he's getting that chance to be on an undercard on a pay-per-view card. And he even went as far and called out. He said if he beats him, there's a fight that he would really like to make happen with Danny Garcia.
Ooh, yeah. But you know what? He's going to have to go through a hailstorm with Alvarado, you know, and I know the Russian kid was expected to beat him on ESPN, but I think it's safe to say that Mike's is a different type of beast and a different type of puncher. He's kind of proved it, and that's why a lot of folks are kind of excited about him. But Herrera's no slouch, man. There's a kid that's going to come to fight, and I think it's going to be a great fight. It's not going to be an easy fight. I know folks are out there saying it's going to be, you know, he's going to overwhelm him, he's going to overpower him. I don't see that happening at all. I don't see that happening.
Yeah, I definitely see this fight kind of stealing. It could possibly steal the show.
I think it is going to steal the show, you know, because the other two, like you said, are just kind of giving picks. You know, they're just kind of there for show and to show the, you know, that these two guys, Marquez and Rios, are destined to meet each other in their next fight. But Josh, I'm going to put you on hold because we got our good friend Justin Fortune that owns the Fortune Gym, is also the trainer of Michael Casitas and among other fighters, and all around he's a good guy, heavyweight. And he's a funny dude to be on here on Leaving the Ring. He's always entertained everybody when he comes on. What's up, Justin? How you doing, brother?
What's up, man? How's it going?
Doing fantastic. How you doing, sir?
Pretty good. We just finished our weigh-in with Katsudis and stuff, so everything is good. Getting ready for tomorrow night.
We had talked earlier in the week that he was like, I think maybe Sunday when we talked or Monday, that he was like 143. He was really on weight for this thing.
Yeah, it was 143 on Monday, and then, you know, with late weigh-ins and then whatnot, we're weighing in at 138.5. So,
talk to me about the changes that you've made with him. I mean, I know one of them was kind of paring him back from how hard he always tried to work out.
Well, with Michael, I found that a lot of his fights were, you know, he was overtrained. And a lot of his fights, he was going in there, absolutely. And you can see that by, you know, looking at it. So I had to pull him back and make sure, because he has it. Michael has a very good work ethic, and it's a little, you know, he'll work right there. He'll train and train and train. So you have Michael back. And, you know, it was just a matter of doing that, keep under control and getting his jab going, getting his head movement going, and, you know, not just little subtle changes make a big difference.
Some guys look at that style and they say, you know, well, he's 31, he's had some losses, he cuts, he's really kind of a brawler, and so they kind of write him off. What do you see when you see
a lot of people have written him off, so, okay, but, you know, again, he's 31, he's a bit of a brawler and that, but then, you know, man, he's 34, Marquez is whatever Marquez is.
38,
you know, these
39.
Guys, 39. Yeah. I mean, he's not written off yet, and, you know, he's not written off yet, and we're going to sort of go there tomorrow night, and this man is a, you know, tough kid, Garner boy, and, you know, we go out there and make a statement with his fight, and then move on to the next one, but Mike's far from written off. That's for sure.
Do you think, because, I mean, he seems like a bright guy. I mean, I think people look at the style and they go, well, he must be a dummy that only comes face first. But he strikes me as a bright guy. Do you think that really helps in this process, that he kind of buys into what you're trying to show him to do, jabbing more, moving his head, using angles?
It's like anything with a fighter. It's not so much if I tell a fighter to do something or I show him to do something and it actually works, and they realize that they're punching harder, oh, yeah, that movement gives me a better angle. If I do that, I'm in a better position to throw my shot to. If I throw a fucking jab properly, it's a hard jab. And once they realize it, then it clicks. And then they'll do it a lot more, you know what I mean?
Right.
It's like, you know, so it's not so much, you know, I'm with a fighter that's already 30 fights deep into his career, you know, he's going to make a change. You don't make a change, you add little things to him. So at the moment of that is, you know, his jab, which is a great jab, and some head movement, and change his footwork around a little bit so it doesn't square up so much. But, you know, maybe next fight I can change another thing or add something else. It's a gradual process. You can't change someone in 6 or 7 weeks. It's, you know, if you just can't. You know, if someone says they can, well, then they talk a lot of shit.
What about that right hand? I've seen that right hand. Sometimes,
well, you know, it's something that I'm working on. If he throws a dead straight right hand, you there?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm having.
If he throws a dead straight right hand, it's a great, great shot. But he's in that habit of throwing that really, really strange right hand, and I'm trying to fix it, but, you know, it's like I said, it's a gradual process.
You use two guys in sparring, Fly and Lewis. What was the strategy in using those two guys? I mean, were they like
Lewis is faster than his opponent, and he's heavier and stronger, but he's a lot more slick. He's a you know, very American-style fighter. So I used him because he's stronger, faster, and he's a slick fighter. And I lose Kai because Kai's a jabber and a runner, and he's awkward as hell. So, you know, he makes Michael think. You know, I mean, he's frustrating. He makes you think. So I want Mike to get frustrated. Right? I want him to settle down. I want him to think about. You there?
Yeah, I'm here.
I want him to think on that and try and, you know, work his opponent. His corner and cut the ring off, and that's why I use Kai because, you know, it was very, you know, they're great guys, great sparring partners, and great fighters too, so, you know. But I wanted Mike to get frustrated. I wanted to think about things, and I wanted to make his fighter move into a position where he could take advantage of it.
Is that part of the strategy too? It's not necessarily always aping exactly who you're fighting, but to give him different challenges and different things that kind of throw him off.
Just to give him different challenges. Everyone says, well, other people say, oh, you know, you should be, you know, why don't you throw a 140-pounder now? Why don't you use something different? So, well, you know, as a fighter gets used to his sparring partner, as his partner gets used to his fighter, it makes it more difficult because then you have to think about making an opening. So you have to sit down and you have to think, okay, Lewis is used to me, and I'm used to Lewis, and I have to make an opening. I have to think about what I'm doing. I have to move into a position where I can take advantage of it. You know, it becomes more technical, and, you know, that's what you need because in the later rounds, when you come up against a guy who's even, then you have to use those fucking tricks to get ahead.
Right.
What's the biggest challenge here? You know, is it keeping his face together because Michael cuts like crazy, or
With Mike, it's like, yeah, keeping his face together. I know Joe Chavez is a great cut man, you know that. And,
yeah.
You know, and just, you know, give him a listen and make him not go flat out. But, you know, Mike's a pressure fighter. And, you know, I worked with Pacquiao for a long time. So people say, yeah, I understand Pacquiao's fast, but I don't know how fast he is so they get in the ring and face him.
Well, right.
Same as Floyd. They say Floyd's fast and he's clicking and he can box his ass off. They don't know how fast he is until they get in the ring and face him. Same with Michael. It's like, you know, he's a pressure fighter. But you don't know that pressure, you get in the fucking ring and he's in your face all the time. And that's the difference, you know what I mean? You know, you can't bar for that or you can't match that.
Now that pressure is ridiculous once you get through training.
Yeah. His pressure is the same as Manny's speed and the same as Floyd's skill. You know, he puts on crazy pressure on a fighter. And, you know, and like I said, you know, it's hard to prepare for that when you don't know what it is, you know what I mean?
Right.
Yeah.
But that's it.
What about this
again,
guy? Yeah. What about this guy from Ghana? I mean, most guys from Ghana.
Take nothing away. We don't take anybody lightly. And Ghana fighters are, you know, they're accurate and they're good fighters. The guy's, you know, he's got a lot of good fights. He's a young, up-and-coming fighter. He wants to make a name for himself. So we'd be foolish to take him lightly. Absolutely not, you know. So he's
always
a good fight.
It always just says distance to me when somebody says, oh, well, one of the fighters is from Ghana. You're like, oh, shit. This guy's probably not going to get knocked out. Do you think it's possible that you guys are going to have to deal with a full fight, or do you think?
You always look to go in the distance, and if a knockout comes, a knockout comes. But if it goes the distance, then, you know, it's just we'll get stronger and stronger. It's, you know, I expect the guy to fall because of the pressure Michael puts on fighters. And it's very hard to keep that work rate up. But Cassie's is easy because he's doing his whole life. But to fight someone like that is very, very difficult. They don't, you know, like I said, they don't realize until they actually get in the ring and fight it.
Yeah, that's really the thing. Go ahead, Dave.
No, I was just gonna ask Justin. You know, we all know about his pressure. Do you try to change him a whole lot, or do you just try to make little subtle changes out of him?
I'm making absolutely subtle changes. At the moment, I got him jabbing and moving his head, which is like, you know, the basic fucking fundamentals of boxing.
Right.
I mean, my God, it's like, why don't you jab? You have a great jab. Why don't you move your head? Like, Jesus, what are you doing? So far,
yeah.
I've got that and his head movement. And to me, there's a marked improvement in his game straight off the bat.
Yeah.
I'm not going to change the fighter. I won't change the fighter overnight because it'll never happen. I'm just making time. Like you said, subtle changes, and hopefully he listens and gets through it. But in the end, like I said, he's a fighter who's 30 fights deep in his career, two world titles. If he gets hit and hurt, he will revert back to his old style, and that's just what everyone does. You
right.
know what I mean?
Right.
Because
yeah.
that's just natural. This is what you do. and I don't give a fuck who you are or what you think you are or how much of a trainer that you can change that. You can't, because that's just what people do. So, you know, hopefully he stays in control and doesn't do that.
Just do you sit down with your fighters and review tapes that of them when they fought and what they've done wrong and go over with them?
I watch. Well, what he's done wrong is pretty much it's fucking cruel. I'm a cruel freak. What he's done wrong is basically everything. Right? He's done wrong with everything. And the only way he won those two world titles was on sheer fucking ball.
Right.
And that's it, because he's, I mean, no offense to his old trainer, but fuck him. The guy was a retard, for God's sake. I mean, you know, 3 months training camp, saunas before the fight. Okay, before the fight.
Uh-huh.
You know, just ridiculous diets and stupid advice. I'm still shocked at some of the shit Michael tells me. I'm like, what are you, fucking insane?
Right.
Who does this crap anymore? We haven't done this in boxing in the U.S. for 20 bloody years.
Like what? Like what, Dustin? What would
like
be
saunas today? The day of the fucking Marquez fight, you're in a sauna? The day of the fight. Because I don't want you to be overweight and it gets your blood circulating and yada, yada, yada. Like, are you kidding me? I sit back and absolutely stunned. I'm stunned. I'm like, what's going on? Who does that? 2012, son, wake the fuck up.
That is, the thing about his legs and everything, you were telling me.
Legs, he's like, you know, when Mike's asthmatic, he wasn't allowed to be asthmatic. I'm like, I don't understand it. But, you know, and unfortunately, there's a guy who's a trainer. See, no, it's cool, but whatever. If you haven't been in the fucking ring, right, if you haven't experienced what a fighter experiences, having to lace up a pair of gloves, and have faked the challenge of someone wanting to beat the shit out of you.
Right.
If you have no business telling another guy and putting him in the ring to face that, you know what I mean?
That's right.
Where do you get off putting someone in there and risk them they're getting hurt and getting bashed? When you've never experienced, you can't relate to a fighter like that, you know what I mean? It's like, why would you do that? I don't know, they just don't fucking get it.
I agree.
How much do you think he's got left? You think it's just a fight assessment?
The twilight of his career. Let's say, no, man, there's no doubt about it. Like the twilight of his career. So it's like, we get, you know, one or two fights, and we look for a title fight, and, you know, and away we go. We'll take the shot. Mike fights. With his way of making weight now and coming down properly. You know, I was with Freddie for a long time, and we had a lot of champions, and everybody made weight. Everyone came in shape, and everyone came ready to fight, and that was the way it is. Now, Michael's experiencing that. He can make 35 easily without the saunas, without all the bullshit. So we're in a unique advantage, I think, of being able to fight at 35 or 40. You know what I mean? So
right,
it opens up a few more doors for us. But, you know, Mike, like I said, Mike's the twilight of his career. You know, for a couple of impressive fights and then a couple of good title fights.
There's nothing wrong with that. I mean, everybody's going to have to go through it.
The 140s are a great division, and 35. We can float it up and down. So it doesn't matter, right? I wish I got hold of this son of a bitch like a year earlier, and things would have been a lot different. But whatever, I got him now, and I plan to make the best of it. And if Mike and I mix well together, we're both Aussies, and we both talk the same language. And you know, he's a great work ethic. And when someone has a great good work ethic like Vasquez and Pacquiao, it's very easy to train them. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Right.
You're saying that you compared. I asked you, and I have my interview coming out tonight, but I said, you know, where does he compare in terms of the top guys? And you surprised me. You said you would consider Israel Vasquez the top, not Pacquiao.
Well, as a guy that I trained as a work ethic, Israel Vasquez was just, I'm sorry, was, you know, Israel Vasquez was, yeah, just has a great, great work ethic. And, you know, and I had such a rapport with Israel. I was given Israel, I started training Israel in 2002. And, you know, between you and me and half your listeners, because Freddie didn't think Israel was going anywhere. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, and I took over Israel, and we, you know, when you have a rapport with your fighter and you do all your stuff, you know, Vasquez was great. He did everything. We won our fucking world title. We won another world title. We defended a few times. But Vasquez has a great work ethic. It's ridiculous. You know, and there's other, you know, we've trained a lot of fighters out of that gym when I was there, and a lot of champions, and, you know, stand out. And Manny has a great work ethic, too. But Manny will cut corners when he can. Vasquez won't, and Cassidy's won't.
Well, awesome, man. I'm really excited. I wish I could be out there, but, you know, how it goes, and I'll see you when you get back.
We're doing our best, and, you know, the boxing games. Anything can happen in boxing.
Anything. It usually does.
Yeah, it usually does.
All right, Justin. Well, thank you so much for taking the time out. I know you guys are busy.
Pleasure, mate.
And I'll catch up with you later. I'll probably have to talk to you.
All right, guys. Take care of yourself. Cheers.
All right, Justin.
Bye.
Thank you very much, bro.
Bye. Bye.
Peace. All right. And, Dave, let me just jump right into our fight schedule. Unless you want to grab a guest real quick, a caller, we can do this, do our predictions. We've got about 15 minutes left. So why don't I just jump right into it?
Yeah, let's just jump right into it.
All right, April 13th, Friday, 2012, at the Lanxess Arena in Köln, Germany. Felix Sturm, 36-2-2, the Teflon Don of Germany, versus Sebastian Zibic, 30-1. This is for the WBA middleweight belt. I'm going with the upset special here, Dave. I know I shouldn't. This guy's got 10 knockouts, Zibic. You know, it shouldn't happen. Felix Sturm can't be beaten in Germany, but I'm taking Sebastian Zibic by out-of-nowhere decision. I just am.
Really?
Yeah, I know. Dave, Steve picked for the same thing. Really?
You got me thinking here a minute. You got me thinking.
Well,
wow.
Just look at it like this. You know,
please give us the explanation. Let's hear this.
That's funny. You know, the Matthew Macklin fight, I mean, it's not like he's completely Shotsky. You know, he's not
right.
Like, completely out of it, Sturm. But he had the loss, in my opinion, and everybody else, to Matthew Macklin. It was a split decision. Next fight, there's a progression to a split draw.
Right.
So now, you know,
I hear what you're saying.
I'm following the pattern. I think Zibic
right.
Has more than enough left. Why not go for the upset special? I mean, it just feels right. You know.
You know what? I could see what you're saying. The pattern, and it just looks like it's slowly and gradually leaning towards to finally a loss. God, I don't know. You know what? I'm gonna stick with Sturm. I don't know, but I won't be surprised. But yeah, you caught me off guard with that one. Let's go with a fight.
At the Hard Rock Casino in Las Vegas, Nevada, Michael on ESPN2's Friday Night Fights. Michael Katsidas, 28-5 versus Albert Mensah, 24-3-1. Whoa, are you still there?
Yeah.
You may want to hang up at this point. We're doing.
I hang up. Sorry. Was I not supposed to hang up?
Yeah, I think you were supposed to hang up.
I wasn't.
You were supposed to hang up.
Oh. Okay. Well, then what's the problem?
Hilarious.
Yeah.
We have Michael Katsidas versus Albert Mensah, Ghana. I'm taking Michael Katsidas.
I think Katsidas.
Yeah. You think Katsidas? I don't know. Mensah could pull the upset.
Well, his kid's coming to fucking fight, so.
Yeah,
that's what I think. Hopefully his face will hold together.
Exactly. There was, hopefully his face holds together. That's my only worry. Is his face holds together. That's all.
in support of that fight is Artemio Reyes, 15-1, versus Alan Sanchez, 9-2-1. I think Dave and I are both going with Artemio Reyes in that one. I'm going by knockout. Dave?
Yeah, right. Yeah, I mean, you know what? Both those kids, one pumps in boxing and one, they're just nice guys. They're both very, very good fighters, and they're good, you know, they're just nice. They're just fucking good guys. So it's a competitive fight. There was, you know, so I'm going for Reyes too, but I hope, you know, I just want a good fight. So.
Yeah, I think so too. You know, to me, they're both gonna kind of like in different parts of their career. Alan Sanchez, you know, slowed down where Reyes did it. And when we talk about the maturity level, you know, when they both said it, Alan Sanchez said, well, difference, I was 18, I'm 21 now. But in those 3 years, what really did you do to mature? Well, Reyes did a lot in that time frame to mature and show the maturity. So I don't know if he stops Sanchez, but I think it's going to be – it might be a different fight because of the fact that Sanchez doesn't like to fight tall. He fights short. And that's going to be the pocket of where Armino Reyes is going to want to do. You know, he's going to want to pickpocket him, and he likes to pickpocket. He did it to Molina, and he's going to do it to Sanchez if Sanchez doesn't smarten up and use the jab and try to use that height.
No, I agree absolutely. So, you know, it's, either way, it's a very entertaining fight. I'm glad it's on TV because both these guys deserve to get the recognition, you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. It's going to be a great fight. This whole ESPN card, I love it. I think it's going to be a fun-filled fight for fight fans out there to tune in. And ESPN has been kind of really dropping the ball, but this time I think they got it right by putting Michael Casillas, Reyes, and Sanchez.
Yeah, well, yeah, listen, let me tell you. It's better than the shit that's going to follow on fucking Saturday night, that's for sure.
I agree with that. We got to have Justin on more often. At the
Hard Rock, they can't give those fucking tickets away. Once Gamboa pulled out, it's like, who cares?
Yeah, right. Exactly.
I mean, really, who cares about Brandon Rios? It's not exciting. Who gives a fuck?
Wow. at the Civic Center in Kimisi, Florida. Oh, there goes Justin. He's dropped out. That's awesome. We need to have him on more often. At the Civic Center in Kimisi, Florida, on Telemundo, Jose Nieves, 19-2-3, versus Alejandro Delgado, versus Alejandro Delgado, 15-6. I have no pick on that. I think it's just going to be a fun fight. Let's just keep it moving because we're running out of time. Saturday night, April 14th. I'm laughing. At the Mandalay Bay Casino in Las Vegas, Nevada, on HBO pay-per-view, 44-95 for a bunch of fights where you kind of know the outcome to. Brandon Rios, 29-0-1 versus Richard Abril, Mexico versus Cuba.
Just really quick before we make that prediction with the Rios, Mike on our Twitter from My Work Mind, he put, can we get the guy on Leave It or Leave It to say that's not a knife, this is a knife? You know what?
Funny.
We probably would have, but we know Justin, and if you've never seen him, he's a heavyweight, and the guy still is a heavyweight. He'd probably crush us, man.
Well, Justin is a classic, you know, he's from Australia, and you look at him, and you're like, you know, I know they're kind of, they get a little sensitive about from the criminal or smuggler stock, but I picture Justin in another life with, like, knife between his teeth, like, you know, captain of a pirate ship. Like, just very, very much picture him that way. He's the kind of guy that if you make him laugh or smile, that you feel like you've accomplished something. But let's just keep it going. I'm taking Brandon Rios by Greg Haugen getting the hell beat out of him by Julio Cesar Chavez Sr. Beating. Mike Alvarado, are you taking that same kind of pick?
I'm taking that same kind of pick, and I'm also taking mid-rounds. I think Rios is not going to let up on him. I think Rios from the beginning is going to jump all over him just to kind of pretty much punish him for the fact of what he did at the conference and what he tried to accomplish. I've always been told, man, if somebody starts the fight, you finish it. I think Rios is going to finish it.
It's a long series of pimp slaps that lead to a ninth-round knockout. Mike Alvarado, 32-0 versus Mauricio Herrera, 18-1. This is fight of the night, in my opinion. I'm going with Mike Alvarado, but I think it's going to be brutal. I'm not sure if it's going the distance. I really can't tell.
You know, I know a lot of folks are really sold on Alvarado, but I saw something with Prescott. Prescott was able to outbox him. Prescott was able to try to keep him there, was landing some hellacious shots. I don't know, man. I think Carrera could have maybe the goods to do enough. Do enough. I don't know. To me, it's a pick 'em fight. In my opinion, it's a huge pick 'em fight.
Yeah, it's a tough fight. You know, I don't know if it's a pick 'em, but I think the ending's a pick 'em. I think Herrera could outbox him and keep him moving, and I think he understands from looking at the Brady Prescott fight that you don't want to move too much. You don't want to get greedy in the fight. You want to box a little bit. You want to move. You kind of just want to move in and out. Get what you can, and then kind of slide away. Prescott kind of stayed in the pocket, and he kept waiting for the receipt too much. He kept getting shot in the body, hit upstairs, and eventually it wore him down. Kind of, you know, we'll stay with the Julio Cesar Chavez Sr. theme, kind of like against Meldrick Taylor. All of a sudden, he had the hell beat out of him, and he didn't realize how that happened. And then it was just too late. He got finished off.
It also goes with Herrera, his conditioning and his legs. Are they going to be conditioned, and how can you keep Mike from coming forward? Because he's not going to stop, and we know the guy could take a punch. He's not going to stop. So Herrera's legs, not just his movement, not just his mind, has got to be sharp, but his legs. His legs really got to be conditioned for this fight. So to me, it's a pick 'em. Like you said, I like the way that you put it. It's a pick 'em at the ending of the fight. There's a lot that should weigh with Mike. But I think there's enough room. I think there's enough opening between the window and the seal that Herrera can pull it off.
That's possible. I mean, I don't think that's out of the realm of possibility at all. But I'm still going with Alvarado. And we will see what that lip is like, too. You know, he got it split wide open in his last fight. It could fall all apart. It was a nasty cut, one of the nastier cuts I've ever seen. Recito Hesta. Versus 24-0-1 versus Luis Arceo, 24-11-4. This is kind of a showcase fight.
Yeah, this is a showcase. And even his trainer, Vicente Parra, who came on, kind of pretty much told us, yeah, this is a showcase. Because they're waiting around. That's what they're doing.
Yeah, I mean, at the same time, you know, he's had his last two fights have been showcase fights, and he's gone a little bit rougher than he should have. So we'll see. You know, I mean, a showcase is only what you make of it. So
Absolutely.
I think it's fun to really kind of turn it on and impress us. We haven't been impressed in a while, and I'd like to see him do that. But I'm taking Hesta by knockout in this one.
I think he's kind of
like the Filipino Andre Berto. I'd like to think that he's not. I'd like to see his skills develop past that. And I mean by that is that he's athletic,
worse,
he's got power.
There are worse games than being compared to Andre Berto, though. Let's be honest.
That's true. Dave, Andre Berto is no slouch, you know.
Yep.
But, and this is actually a split-side pay-per-view. So at the Mexico City Arena in the main event in Mexico City, Mexico, Juan Manuel Marquez, 53-6-1, versus Sergey Fedchenko, 30-1. Fedchenko has the body of a guy that works for FedEx. He just looks like kind of just like a businessman, you know, that wears boxing trunks. I think he gets stopped by Marquez, who looks a little strong at the weigh-in. I don't know if you saw it, but he's looking every minute of his age. But, you know, he's still a specimen. He's still one of the great counterpunchers of all time. I think he either takes this decision, possibly gets the late stoppage. I'm looking at the soft body of Fedchenko, that midsection, and I think it ends on a left hook to the body.
Yeah, I don't think Sergey is gonna Fedchenko Juan Manuel Marquez in this fight, unfortunately. You know, but like you said, with Marquez too, looking at him, was Memo part of the team? Probably not. And I think the reason why, because they knew that they were gonna get a Fedchenko, and they didn't have to really up the camp or up the assistance of people out there. So yeah, Juan Manuel Marquez, I said mid round stoppage.
At the Cicero Stadium in Cicero, Illinois, on Telefutura, Edner the Cherry Bomb, Cherry, 29-6-2 versus Juan Martinez, 19-13-1. Gee, I wonder who's going to win that fight. Jose Alonso, 13-0, versus Lamar Rush in a crossroads battle between undefeateds. He's 9-0. I'm going with Alonso. He's got more wins. I don't know anything about either of these guys. I'm this full disclosure, I haven't seen much of them, so I'm just going to take a wild guess and go with the guy with more wins. At the Odyssey Arena earlier in the day, if you have some sort of web stream, from Belfast, Northern Ireland, Tyson Fury, one of my favorite names in boxing, 17-0 versus Martin Rogan, 14-2. Fury didn't look so great in his last fight, but
no.
I'm still going with him. I think he beats Martin Rogan, no relation to Joe Rogan. I'm going to take Tyson Fury, probably by knockout. Probably a little bit of a get back, a little bit of a soft touch for him to kind of get his confidence underneath him. I think that's a pretty safe bet, but Fury's the kind of guy that he makes just about every fight a little bit harder than it should be.
He makes it a little harder, makes it exciting, and we can definitely, I think we can be, I'm pretty sure we can say that Martin's not going to come in with any jokes. He's going to come in with some bombs himself to try to take out Tyson Fury. But this is a showcase, in my opinion, for Fury to keep him going and keep him moving up in the heavyweight rankings.
And rounding it out, at the Forum Imperial in Acapulco, Mexico, Brian Vasquez, 28-0 versus Gilbert Gonzalez, 18-2. And at the Estadio Ruchache in Neuquén, Argentina, the shell that houses Carlos Valdemir's soul, 48-13-6, versus Billy Godoy, 24-0. I'm going to go with the upset special. I'm going to go with Godoy. And the reason why is because his brother is also on the card. I think it's a showcase for him. I'm going to go with the chalk and say Godoy by unanimous decision, just because I like saying the last name, Godoy. And that is your weekend fight schedule.
Really quick, too, so you know, for honorable mention, Alex Arthur is going to be back in Scotland. And Audley Harrison, oh, my God, in England. Somebody please take this guy's license away.
Wow. Broadly Harrison returns.
Yeah.
That's pretty much it. Dave,
that's it.
As always.
Yep, as always, you know, we always have a lot of fun here. We always thank everybody that tunes in and leaving the ring. Don't forget to go pick up your Undisputed Fight magazine at our website at leavingtheringradio.com. And be sure to always tune in and listen to our sister station, Noche de Boxeo. I'm out. Myself, Dave Duenas. Do not drink or drive, please, and enjoy the weekend fights.
Don't drink.
Yeah.
Dave, as always, great time. I'll see you next week, and enjoy the fights. Peace.
All right, brother. Take care.